It's Seven Land Hand, brought to you by Good Game St. James.
That's lame.
Raise the alarm. In this Seven Land Hand, we have our first response to the N15 set. Our eternal thirst for new cards has stained the mind with this solemn podcast offering. So don't fest the gloom, rather unshackle your knob Nixilis and act on impulse with your belligerent sliver. Never say this to your girlfriend, though. It would be very, very bad. All right. I've got a couple of unshackled knobs here. To join me today from the caves of Coilus, I have Aaron Graham.
Yeah, that's me. Deep within the cave, unshackling my knob Nixilis.
Yeah. Hair like a homeless man. Right. Hey. And our very own radiant fountain of knowledge, Kian de Vries van Nul.
Well, I do like gaining life.
Does he? I don't think he does.
Sphinx's revelation.
Oh, you've done that once or twice.
Gentlemen, how are we? What's been happening?
Yeah, doing well. Yeah. It's been a hectic week. M15 is exploding.
It's so exciting, isn't
off
it?
Off the shelves and into people's...
Literally exploding. Literally exploding. Yeah. So we've killed many people this week just by opening a booster.
Putting explosives inside their booster boxes, resealing the packaging with like a candle... Mm. And then they take it home and we just remote detonate them and they die.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more likely that you sold them a booster box, they opened it up and it had 36 repacks in it, and then their mind exploded.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem to be a mythic rare or rare in any of these packs.
That's heard of to happen.
And since when do wizards close their boosters with just sticky tape?
Yeah.
Like, anyway, that's 100%.
Why is it all burnt? Why does it smell like lavender candles?
So speaking of which, today we're going to kick off with the highly original and not copied off anybody.
No. Oh. Don't smell it, though. That's copyrighted.
Bust the booster. Now, we were friggin' annoying last time we did this, so let's hope for, like, majorly annoying today.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, that's our own peculiar style.
Yeah, I can settle for
that. So, you know, for those of you that are playing at home, we're going to bust the booster. Mm-hmm. And, Kian, Aaron, you're going to give me the rundown of how these cards have gone this week? Whether you'd like them? Or we're going to open them and do draft picks?
Yeah, let's do draft picks.
All right,
we'll do a quick draft pick, and then we'll do some anecdotes about some of the cards.
The cards have been released. Okay, I'm starting off with that looks cool. Miner's Bane.
Miner's
Bane.
That's bad.
That's gross.
Ah, that's a good picture though. All right, it's 4 red for a 6/3. And
I'm out.
It's a creature. It's an elemental. His ability is two and a mountain. Miner's Bane gets +1/+0 and gains trample until the end of turn. Boy, that's expensive, isn't it?
For a
+1/+0 and trample.
So the turn after you play him, you pay 6 mana and he becomes an 8/3 with trample and he'll just get blocked by something.
Yeah,
and he'll die deal him 3 or 4 damage. I don't want to play 12 mana for that privilege. Not excited about that.
Rather just play Lava Axe because you do the same thing for less.
Yeah, it's the same thing. And there's so many good 5 and 6 drops in this format that you just don't need this. I thought I would play it in some decks, like as a finisher, like clear the way, hit him for 6, clear the way, hit him for 6, they're dead. But it hasn't come up.
You've spent, 9 mana, and you've still only got something with 3 toughness.
Yeah.
That's too easily disposed of, isn't it?
If it gave it like +1/+1...
strike.
I'd be pretty happy with that. But +1/+0 is just like... Because you can lightning strike it, you can just block it with a 3/3.
Well, you can block it because it's got trample. So it's going to hit you for 7 and whatever. You're going to lose a creature.
But you can just block it with that 2-drop in white, the 3/1, the 2 mana. Then you take 6 damage once, but you traded your 2-drop for that 6-drop.
Okay, so we're never going to play that, so I'll put that on the discard.
We're definitely not first picking it.
Can I actually just put this on the floor?
No. I like the picture.
Look at it.
I like the picture, and more on that later.
What?
Razorfoot Griffin. He's 3 and a white for a creature. Surprisingly, he's a griffin.
What?
He's a 2/2. 2/2 for 4 with flying, and he's got first strike. So what do you think of that?
Is that it?
Is that all? Yeah.
I expect more from my 4-mana flyers these days.
4-mana
flyers? You expect more than 2 abilities.
Yeah, I expect more than 2 abilities on a 2/2.
But a first strike flyer, that's got to knock a lot of people out of the air, isn't it?
Yeah, like the majority of flyers in this set are 4/4s with flying at rare. So he doesn't do anything. He's actually going to defend you pretty well from ground creatures, but then it just means that his flying isn't doing much till you start attacking with him later.
Yeah.
So he's performed for me in core sets in the past, but in this one he seems fairly badly matched.
This guy's a reprint.
I've played him turn 4 a few times, and like it's just blanked my opponent's board because they have like the red 1/2 that becomes a 3/2 when attacking, and like one or two other creatures, and like he's just like, hey,
just stops them from coming anywhere near him.
That's right. He's going to come out on turn 4, which makes that 2/2 look a little bit less, you know.
Exactly. So. And the problem is, like, the first strike's more of a defensive ability on the flyer, because if you're attacking, like, if they have a 2/3 of flying, you just never attack with it. So you don't really want that to be paying for that, like, a 4-mana defender.
They're better in different sets when there's a lot of 2-toughness flyers.
Exactly. Exactly.
When Windrakes exist.
Yeah. Right. The next card is a blue card. It's Fugitive Wizard. It's
what a sterling pack so far.
Fantastic, eh?
First picking that one.
Yeah. Here's one blue. He's a creature. He's a human wizard. And he's a 1/1. And his abilities are... He's got flavor text.
So remember, that is his ability.
Remember him for future... or is it a she?
It's a lady fugitive wizard.
Looks like a lady fugitive wizard with sort of man arms. Anyway. Yeah, what?
No. Literally never play this card.
Never play that card. All
right. Actually, sideboard it against a deck that's attacking you with a lot of creatures with 1 toughness. So they're like, 2-1, 3-1, 3-1, 3-1, and that kills you. You might bring it out of the sideboard if you've got a slow deck.
Oriska Swift Claw.
Yeah, like it blocks 3/1s, and that's the only thing it's good for.
Okay, well, I think we talked about this guy in the spoilers show. Hammerhand. He's 1 mountain.
That's like a Marvel character.
Yeah, he's just got a glowing fist of lava. Mm-hmm. It's an enchantment. It's an aura. Enchant creature. When Hammerhand enters the battlefield, target creature can't block this turn. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has haste. That's a good card for haste, isn't it? Cheap haste.
Like it's good utility in aggressive decks. It stops that guy from getting blocked, gives your guy a permanent boost. There's not as much removal in the set, so you're not going to get 2-for-1 instant speed against the majority of decks. And later on, it just, you know, you keep it in your hand because it's not going to affect the board too much. Throw it on your 5-drop that you draw.
It's got to be... In drafting, it'll be all right because you might end up with spare mana, right? But if you're wanting your six-cost card to come out, you're probably going to be spending 6 to get it out there, so you're never going to get to drop an extra 1 on it, are you? So.
It's good in the very corner scenario of, like, it's turn 6, and you draw a 5-drop off the top, play it, and stick the thing on it. But
and he gets +1/+1, and, there's a bit more biff, but, like you said, corner case.
Yeah.
Are we putting that? That's not...
You pick him up later. Yeah.
It's okay, but, like, if you're first picking that card, I'm pretty sure... The pack just had 14 fugitive wizards.
We'll put it in the middle then.
It's better than the ones that we've seen, I think.
If we get a red rare or a red card that we pick, maybe that's something we'll look out for when it comes back.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Oh, here we go. Hunt the Weak. I'm sure we've talked about this guy before. Mm-hmm. 3 and a green for a sorcery. Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. Then that creature fights target creature you don't control.
Yeah. Green decks don't have a lot of interaction in the set, and this is their main, very ham-fisted way of doing that.
Prey upon kind of stuff. Yeah, it's a...
Prey upon was awesome because it cost 1 mana for this effect, and your creature's always going to be bigger than theirs in green.
Yeah.
But in this one, it costs 4 mana. It's a sorcery.
Like, he keeps his +1/+1.
It does keep the +1/+1, so that's good, but...
You always play it, but you're never excited.
Extremely unexcited.
For what you might else do with 4 mana in green.
Yeah.
You know, you probably want to
build... Living Totem.
You probably want to grow scavenger. You'd be building your board state, really, fourth turn, wouldn't you, with that? Mm-hmm. So,
great utility, I found it.
Right?
They play a 5/5, and then I put a +1/+1 counter on my Hornet's Nest and make their 5/5 fight my Hornet's Nest.
Beautiful. The old Shades are back. Zoth Shade. He's a 3 and a swamp. He's a creature. He's a shade. They haven't gone very colourful with their names, have they? He comes out as a 2/2.
Damage wizards.
He comes out as a 2/2, and like other shades, you get to boost it. And this one costs 3 mana, 2 and a swamp. Zoth Shade gets +2/+2 until the end of turn.
Yeah.
So,
how does this guy was last around in Rise of the Eldrazi.
Yeah.
Which was a format where you had a shitload of mana. And so you just play 9 mana and just attack with your big 8/8 creature. In this format, it's merely serviceable.
Would rather play Razorfoot Griffin.
You'd rather play Razorfoot Griffin than this one? Mm-hmm. I've liked this because black doesn't have a lot of four drops. It does have a lot of fives. So you just need to fill your curve with stuff in some black decks. So it's okay, and like later on it becomes a mana sink and it's going to be bigger than anything else on the board. But
yeah, but you'd be disappointed at fourth turn to drop this guy. You're paying four for a 2/2.
Same with the Griffin and his shit on defense as opposed to the Razorfoot Griffin, which can hold back three creatures. This can hold back nothing.
This is like building for failure. So it's like, turn four, let's drop this guy out. And if I haven't got anything next round because I'm such a pessimist, I can stick three mana on it and make it into a 4/4, which... Yeah. You know, 4/4/4 would be all right.
Because
he's got nothing else.
But you've got to pay for the privilege.
You've got to pay for the privilege, yeah. By which time you spent 7 mana, but you've got to forget about that.
It's not great all up.
All right, so he's on the discard pile as well. Wow, our uncommons are not making us happy today.
Yeah.
Charging Rhino. He's the first foil I got in this set.
Oh,
fine. 3/2 greens. Creature, guess what? He's a rhino.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
And he's no charging badger. I'd like to point that out as well.
First base,
this is like rampaging, his cousin. No rampaging beaver, this guy. Okay, so he's 5 mana for a 4/4. Charging rhino can't be blocked by more than one creature. Ah, that'll trick.
Yeah, that's good. So it can't be chump. Well, can't be double blocked. Not.
Well,
of course,
no, it
can be chump blocked. Yeah.
Can't be blocked by more than one creature. Can't be blocked by more than one creature.
Yeah, so they can't double block it.
Right,
so,
gotcha.
So they're throwing 1/1s, 2/2s in the way, whereas like before if they had 2/2/3s.
He's a chump block sponge.
Yeah.
Is what he is.
Yeah, that's what they should call it. Chump block sponge, creature type, rhino.
And just have a picture of SpongeBob SquarePants or something, you know? Like with a tree
absorbing
behind him.
Damage.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, what do we think of charging rhino?
It's... better than the cards that we've seen so far.
Right.
Much better if you have the green paragon.
Yeah, green paragon.
The ability to give him trample makes him go from like okay to great.
He's never going to be first pickable, though,
but
is
never
he?
First so pickable. It's
a mid-range sort of card.
And
right.
Again, lots of five drops in this format. You end up with a lot of fives and charging around. I've cut it from my draft decks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Typhoid Rats for a swamp is a 1/1. So it's a 1/1/1. He's a rat, but... He has death touch.
He's a rat?
He's a rat.
Oh, yeah. Pack rat.
Typhoid rats. Well, hang on a minute. We missed
this
that.
This is every single card. Every creature that we've looked at, apart from Miner's Bane. Creature type, Bane.
He's a miner. Now I like cards like this because this is when you're behind...
Yeah.
And everyone else is building awesome board state, and you have one shitty card with death touch you don't give a crap about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Offense is over, or they want to throw something at it and lose it.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
It's
good.
I unfortunately think
we're happy about that.
It's slightly better than the rhino because it blocks the rhino and kills it.
Also, like against some of the newer players out there, they see a death touch guy and they're like, "Oh, I'm not going to attack." And they have four dudes.
It's actually like more inexperienced players just never they never trade a 2-drop or 3-drop for it because they're like, "It's just a stupid 1/1 with death touch." But it's stopping them from advancing or attacking in future turns.
Sometimes you just got to suck it
just
up. Just got to throw something into it.
I've traded your 2/2, your 3/1 for it.
Yeah,
it's
and then
happen.
I'm going to kick your ass on the next round of the round after that. Yeah, because otherwise, that's why I like these cards because you can hold people at bay for ages. Yeah. And then after 3 or 4 rounds, they say something like, "I've had people say I should probably just traded for that typhoid rat four rounds ago."
That's why you're dead now. Really like it in the black decks. Black has a lot of really good flyers. Black's got the 2/2 for 3 that comes into play. Tap Carrion Crow, and also has Necrogen Scudder. And I love this guy gumming up the ground while I fly over the top with some large things.
Mm.
So
mid range? Are we thinking about
middle of the road? I'm not happy about.
If I open these 7 cards, I'm probably first picking it.
Yeah,
really.
So far,
These other cards we've seen.
I totally would you, man.
Choose.
This is the first card I'm excited about because I love my cheap death touch. Yeah,
also,
I
like black in the format too.
I have done like triple Typhoid Rats and one Unmake the Graves in my deck. And my opponent's just been like, ugh.
So Unmake the Graves, you get 2 creatures from your graveyard back to your hand. You're just like, trade for their things. They're like, thank God that fucking rats is gone. And you're like, Unmake the Graves? Pay 2 mana, get 2/1/1s of death. You're like, oh my God. Build your own Hornet Queen.
Rotfeast the Maggot. He's 4 in a swamp.
This.
And guess what? He's not a maggot. He's creature. He's an insect.
Rotfeaster insect.
Yeah. So there's a Rotfeaster maggot for four in a swamp, and he's a 3/5. Mm-hmm. So we've got to do our thinking there. So he's got 5 toughness, 3 power. When Rotfeaster maggot enters the battlefield, exile target creature card from a graveyard. You gain life equal to that card's toughness.
So your Rotfeaster maggot comes down, buffs your life up a little bit, 2, 3, maybe 4 if you're lucky, and then blocks even more for you. It can block Charging Rhino all day. It blocks pretty much everything that you need it to on the ground. It's really, really solid card. Really impressed me.
It's incidental life gain, so that's always okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Exiling target, there's a bit of graveyard usage going on. We saw that in the latest Super Series
final. Exactly. You can,
so
you can
this card would have been useful then.
You can exile stuff from their graveyard to stop them from getting it back. And, like, you know, gaining 4 or 5 life later in the game is nothing to sneeze at.
I've also used it to turn on Warden of the Beyond more than once.
Ooh, wow. Never even thought about that. Warden of Beyond's an uncommon white card. 2/2 with vigilance for 3 mana. It gets +2/+2 if your opponent owns a card in exile. Right. So usually you've got to exile one of their creatures. It's pretty hard to get, but this one just kind of does it incidentally.
Yeah.
That's good. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, right.
That's nice.
So is this potentially a first pick if we get...
I like it better than Rat, personally.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I still think Rat.
You
just
think
because,
Rat
like, Rotfeaster Maggot is good, but you only ever want to play 1, maybe 2.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I would happily play a playset of Typhoid.
Absolutely.
Rats. Oh, so, yeah, like, you know, I'm expecting that I'll pick up a Rotfeaster Maggot at some point, but Typhoid Rats... Gimme.
Yeah, having an army of Typhoid Rats would be just awesome because people get sick of it. It'd be a demoralizing move.
And it's
to
better
see
in
that.
Your like if you see an opening hand of 4 Rotfeaster Maggots and 3 and 3 swamps and 4 but 4 swamps and 3 Typhoid Rats, you're like, I'll keep the shit out of this.
Also, Typhoid Rats helps you put things in the graveyard for Rotfeaster Maggots.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh,
no combo.
I just looked at that first uncommon and I'm immediately disappointed. It's Staff of the Wild Mages. 3 colorless for an artifact. We saw these in when
last
did this come out?
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah,
last
was it last quarter?
14, yeah.
Right. Where they weren't terrible.
Whenever you cast a green spell or a forest enters the battlefield under your control, you... Oh, hang on. What did I say? Whenever you cast a green spell or a forest enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 1 life.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's...
It's not... But it's not incidental life gain. It's you're playing a whole
card. You have to pay a whole card for it.
And then...
Yeah. There's a slight artifact sub-theme in this format... but it's still not excusable to play these ones.
You can tap cards. You can use it for some...
Convoke
abilities.
I've played like 10 drafts, I've never played one. I've played like 10 sealeds. I've never played one.
My opponents have never played one against me either.
It's one of those cards that accidentally ends up in your hand last pick, I reckon.
Yeah.
I'm glad there's more uncommons in this set, so I see that card less.
Okay, talking about Ugly Undercarriage, Belligerent Sliver, mentioned in the intro.
Belligerent Sliver.
Belligerent Sliver. He's 2 in a mountain for an uncommon creature who happens to be... A sliver,
sure.
Yeah.
Really?
He comes... He's a 3 mana for a 2/2. Sliver creatures you control have this creature... Sliver creatures you control have... This creature can't be blocked except by 2 or more creatures.
Oh, that's all right.
And there's not a lot of slivers, I understand.
No, there's 6 slivers in the set. One of them's a mythic. There's a land that makes slivers.
Are they all different colors?
All different colors. Yeah. 1 in each color. Uncommon. It's very rare that you're going to pick up multiples.
Yeah.
And not enough for this ability to be relevant either. Mm. That's the case with most of them.
I've seen it played as like a poor man's Krenko's Enforcer.
Yeah,
but
You
know, like, it's kind of Windrake-ish. It's like 3 drop with a tiny bit of evasion.
If you've got some equipment and some auras, it's okay, but, like, I'd prefer to play a lot of other cards over it. I'm just not happy.
I'm putting it straight in the discard pile.
It's not
okay, so far we're playing black. We're going with the Rotfeaster Maggot or the Typhoid Rats.
Yeah.
All right, we've got Zathrid Slyblade for 2 and a swamp.
Oh, so many good black cards.
Sign me up.
2 and a black for a 2/1. This delightful young lady, I would say.
Lady.
Blue face. She looks like she's got
blue faced lady.
Yeah. She's a creature. She's a human assassin. She's got hexproof. 3 and a swamp will also buy you until the end of turn. Zathrid Slyblade loses hexproof and gains first strike and death touch.
Mm.
Right.
a potent combination of abilities.
Yeah,
it is. So it's like covered
in a
shroud.
You can take anybody down. Oh, no, there goes the pop shield.
Oh, no.
So far, we've been playing with a pop shield in front of Aaron. And
he's like spitting into the microphone. Yeah. I gesticulated too wildly and it fell down.
Sethrid Slybag
makes
him wave your arms.
You always gesticulate too wildly, Aaron.
Oh, no, that's end of that.
Zathrid Slideblade. So it comes down with a veil of hexproof over it.
Yeah.
And you chuck it in combat, pay 4 mana for the privilege of the first strike and death touch, which will kill anything that it blocks. But, like, it leaves it very open to instant speed removal. But there's not heaps of instant speed removal in this format. So it's actually really powerful. You're going to get the first strike and death touch. It's just going to stop him from attacking a lot of the time if you have mana.
This card is really good.
Yeah.
My favorite sealed deck so far, I had this and Yisen the Bard. And I got to 7 mana and Yisen was on 3 counters. I activated Yisen in combat, got Zathrid Slideblade out of my deck, blocked, gave it first strike and death touch. And my opponent was like, scoop.
Yeah, instant speed. He's attacking with a charging rhino or something. Just flash in this guy and give it the ability. That's pretty good.
Well, here's something I haven't seen before as well. This card actually has designed by.
I
haven't seen that before.
Yeah, 15 cards from the set spread over all the rarities were designed by game designers who had designed other games that aren't Magic.
That's cool.
I'm not sure who this one was designed by.
Rob Pardo.
I don't know what he did. The guys from Penny Arcade did one. Is Avarice Amulet. Looks a little bit like Pac-Man, which is an in-joke from their comic. Hot Soup was just designed by like one of those guys. What's the big one? Spirit Bonds was designed by Pro Tour player Justin Gary.
Wasn't Hot Soup designed by one of the people who had something to do with the Two Towers, the Lord of the Rings movie?
Oh, no.
It was meant to be a playoff of the like orc running through
really?
The thing to block Helm's Deep.
Oh, that's fun. No, I didn't know that one.
All right. We got an insect token to build it up.
I do love insects.
Mm-hmm. And so that would probably mean that I think we've got a foil as well.
You've taken the basic out. We have a foil.
Yeah, we have a foil. Okay. Yeah, Kian does a quick card count.
We do have a foil.
And we have a rare, and it is Siege Dragon. Oh, what do we do with Zathrid Slybad, by the way?
First Behemoth.
Yeah,
first
pick in
that one.
So far, yeah.
So he's leading. So sorry to break the big intro.
That's okay.
Siege Dragon, 5/2 mountains for a 5/5. He's got flying. He's a creature. He's a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you saw that coming, didn't you? Flying. When Siege Dragon enters the battlefield, destroy all walls your opponent controls. Whenever Siege Dragon attacks, if defending player controls no walls, it deals 2 damage to each creature without flying that player. Oh, God. Without flying that player controls.
Yeah.
All right.
So, dragons generally, rares in every set, always good, always playable. This one costs 7, which is the only mark against it. When it comes down, destroys some of their defenses. There's a wall sub-theme in
which
this.
Which could do absolutely nothing
for you. Could do nothing.
It's the least playable dragon I've seen in a while in terms of limited, just because of how much it costs.
Yeah, 7 is like nothing to sneeze at.
Well, it's going to ensure that its second ability is probably going to take place because it's going to get rid of all the walls,
mm-hmm.
and then it's going to have that effect of dealing 2 damage to each creature without flying.
It's pretty unfortunate if you play it and then your opponent's like, "Now I'll play
now
my
I'll
wall."
Play a wall. Yeah,
playing around Siege Dragon.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but something like. The 7, I'll only ever play 1 7 drop in my decks. But this one is actually helped by a common in this set, Generator 7, which is a 2/1. Sacrifice, add 2 mana to your mana pool, colorless mana. If you spend it on a creature, it gets haste. I've used that to generate a turn 5 Siege Dragon, which is attacking that turn. Mm. And that's just going to close a lot of games.
Okay, so we're taking Siege Dragon over Zathrid's Library.
What do you think? I am.
Yeah?
I like the dragon.
It's really close.
I think it's pretty close.
I would probably have to have a look at the pack and be like, who do I want on my left? Like, what color do I want?
Because you are passing a lot of black cards.
Yeah.
In the middle, there's a couple of good black ones. Like, remember, there's Typhoid Rats and Rotfeast the Maggot that might come around. And for red, we might have Hammerhand come around again.
You're more likely to. I'm not sure you'll get any of the black cards back because this pack is so weak.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not sure you get much back.
So I think I just take Siege Dragon actually.
Probably, yeah.
All right, and hey, I've got to say, we've got a foil and it's a rare.
Oh, okay. This is the interesting.
I'm excited.
Okay, it is Mercurial Pretender.
Ooh.
He's a 4 and an island for a creature which is a shapeshifter. Yeah. So he's a 5 cost for a 0/0. So let's see what the text has to say for itself. You may have Mercurial Pretender enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature you control, except it gains two island island. Return this creature to its owner's hand. So it's got a bounce ability.
Yeah, so you can bounce it, reset it to target a different thing, or if they try and kill it with a removal spell, you can bounce it back to your hand in response.
So you've already got to have a decent creature that you like out
there. That's the problem with this card. Clones are generally good because you can copy your opponent's creature if they play a good one. But this requires you to already have a good thing that you want.
And if you're drafting, the card space that this is taking up needs to be that card, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, if you copy a Typhoid Rats, you're not very happy. If you copy a Rotfeast of Maggot, you're probably okay with that because you can return it to your hand and keep playing it again. I'm just looking at ones that we've opened just as, like, you know, middle of the road examples.
I mean, I played it in Sealed. I played it in Sealed where I was perfectly fine copying a Frostlynx.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Frostlynx, a card that costs 3 mana, 2 colorless, in blue. And when it enters the battlefield, tap target creature. It doesn't untap during its controller's untap step, which is a really good effect.
So you want something like it enters the battlefield trigger to from him, and then you can return to your hand and do it again every turn?
Right. Like, would you be okay playing him as a Living Totem?
Yeah. Just because you have the upside of being able to return it to your hand and stuff. But it's nowhere near
definitely not first pick.
No, Zathrid Slyblade and Siege Dragon are both better.
And there's only one other card that's blue in this whole pack, which is Fugitive Wizard, which we're not going to take. So this whole pack's not going to help you out when it comes around again if you're going to stick with blue. If this is the first pack you're opening and you want to stay strong in one color and choose your second color in the second pack, this pack isn't going to help you.
My pick's Siege Dragon. I like Siege Dragon here.
Yeah. Keen, you agree?
Yes. If Mercurial Pretender tables, I would probably pick it up and then move into blue.
I don't think it goes nine.
Siege Dragon, then Mercurial Pretender comes around, you're playing blue-red.
I'm playing blue-red. I have actually picked up that card 12th pick in a draft.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not that bad. I think people are underrating it, but it's still not fantastic.
We're back, and Keen's taken a step outside.
Hello.
Who's
that?
I'm not Ken.
That's not Ken at all.
Sounds like Austin Mengler.
Yeah.
And we're in the Austin Mengler gallery, live from.
Yeah. I'm sort of talking in a room full of my own artwork. It's quite humbling.
And as I look over his left shoulder, there's a picture of him. It's not Oogie Boogie.
That green one? Yeah.
Yep. That's not the zombified unicorn, the other one. Yeah.
All right, Austin's one of our local artists, or the local artist, let's say that, underlined. The only local artist.
I like that, yeah.
Dress them. Yeah, well, we're in Perth, so it's just a desolate waste with Austin.
One artist.
Austin and a pen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Austin's come in today. He's going to talk about the top five art picks from the M15 release, and then give us a bit of a spotlight on one of the artists themselves.
Now, bear warning, I know nothing much about magic.
Don't say that.
A noob.
You know lots about magic.
Aaron will bring the card.
I do know a lot about the artists behind it. So,
right. So what's your first pick out of
the latest set? Would have to be Nissa Windwalker by Peter Moorbucker.
World Waker.
See, I told you. I was trying to warn you. Peter Moorbucker is a great magic artist, and his work is incredible. He's done a Kickstarter recently, actually.
I'll
be using him as the artist spotlight, so I'll go into that at the end.
Awesome. All right. So what did you pick Nissa for?
What grabbed
you about that one?
I might be biased because I like Peter so much, but it's a great composition. I know it's a good character, but
I assume you've seen the full art version.
Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome.
I'd really recommend checking out all the artists online. Yeah. You can see high res pics of all their pictures, and it's really inspiring for artists like myself.
Yeah. So how does he work as far as
sketching and then does Photoshop painting as well. A lot of them are digital Photoshop painting, but then there are also some traditional artists too.
This is an interesting card because it's a planeswalker, so you get the ghosted out third-ish of the picture there.
So you don't get the full scale of the picture because they usually do a big full portrait and they only focus on a little bit of it.
And it's a good incentive to.
I don't know if you're going to talk about Chandra, but I met the artist for Chandra at one of the Grand Prix that I went to, and the full art of Chandra, she's fairly small in the picture, and the card art is just around her, but it's got the full lava and background of the thing. Yep. You don't even see most of that in the Planeswalker art.
All right, what's your second pick, Austin?
Number two would be another one of my favorite artists, Act on Impulse by Brad.
This one.
Brad
Rigney.
So good. Yeah. No, I like this one. This one is so far has stuck out as one of my favorites. Yeah.
Brad Rigney actually did the cover artwork of Garrick, the one you see, the black and white one.
Oh,
with the glowing purple eyes.
He's fierce and face.
He's an amazing artist. Like, he took like a long time to get going. He only started doing art in his 30s and 40s, but you know, he's like started out and.
Yeah,
it's it's quite amazing. He's also done that the older picture for Magic, the Planeswalker Pantheon.
That was him?
Yeah.
Oh, wow,
like,
that
it was a huge picture.
Yeah, and it's got like
10 or so characters or so.
Yeah,
and it took him about 6 months straight to do.
Shit.
Like 4 to 5 hours sleep each night. Like, he was just painting.
That's
like,
unbelievable.
If you go to his DeviantArt gallery,
I remember seeing it on DeviantArt a real long time ago. I was like, who did this? Because it was like just a pseudonym.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know who it is, it's awesome.
You can look it up. He's a crypt crawler on DeviantArt. But you can zoom in like pretty much like half how big it was, but it's still huge. And
he solves one of the problems of we've seen over the years many pictures where you see a close up of someone's eye and then a reflection within the eye, and it always looks a bit like, oh, I don't know if I'd really see, you know, there's just that doubting thing. So this looks like Chandra with some welding goggles on and you can see exactly what she's doing to someone.
Great composition.
It's brilliant.
It's
awesome. Storytelling,
such a sweet piece of artwork
for such a close up.
And there was always that joke, like, Chandra's always depicted with her goggles just like on her head.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, does she ever use them?
Yeah.
And the flavor text is like, you don't want to see what happens when I put on the goggles.
That's great.
And now we are.
Now I know not to use that flavor text.
Yeah, it's definitely awesome. Yeah.
All right. What's your third pick?
Number three would have to be In Garrick's Wake by Chase Stone.
Ooh.
In Garrick's really, Wake. Really cool picture. Also another one of my favorite artists, Chase Stone.
Chase Stone.
Yeah.
Let's
flicking through the book.
Yeah, it's number 100, actually.
Yeah, and, it's a black card.
It's a great card. It's like the art is amazing.
Oh, yeah, it looks cool.
Another one where if you go online and look it up, like, it just all the detail is incredible.
Yeah, because like sometimes you can get a lot of the detail lost in the very small square.
Yeah.
But in Garrick's Way, very cool. Mm.
That's a very leading your eye in, isn't it, sort of picture? You know, you've got the foreground
and
you travel left to right.
You know, look at all the details if you can in a bigger version, because you see all the little roots that are going like out of his arm into the tree and everything.
Oh, is he becoming part of the tree?
Yeah, he's like infecting the land and stuff.
Oh,
fantastic.
Wow.
It's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is Garrick, is it? And I can't
take
it out. Right.
Kind of squatting and he's like, killing that tree.
Yeah, he just got up from taking a dump on that.
Touched a tree to steady himself and died.
Who's over there? So in Garrick's Wakes, actually, they're talking about
the smell
coming from
his poop.
Some poor traveler's going to come wandering through there and go, I just stood in some Garrick's
Only
Wake.
Only death.
Oh, no, Garrick's Wake. Garrick in black as well there.
Yeah, I know.
All right, number four.
Number four would have to be the number one card, Ajani Steadfast.
Ajani Steadfast.
By Chris Rahn.
I love
this. Another
Planeswalker.
Yeah, this was actually an oil painting, traditional work.
No way.
What?
And I think it just sold on eBay for about 14 grand.
Wow.
There was a bid for it, and it was like, I saw it on Facebook, and it was huge. Like, it was a big
You got in there when it was like $17.50.
Yeah. Oh,
came
shit.
Back, came back the next day. 13
but,
grand.
It was incredible, and, you know, it's really good to see, you know, that quality of fantasy art being sold at that high price.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And traditionally done as well. I've seen so
incredible.
Many, like, you know, that people just, like, you know, can do landscapes in Photoshop in like 10, 15 minutes.
And a lot of people, you know, assume it's all all digital now because,
sure.
you know, that's the way. But to see it actually...
It's cheating, isn't it? Using digital art, Austin. It's just cheating. No?
Of course not.
Nah.
No.
It's the tools you use.
It's the tools you use.
You can't, you know, just... Right click, make art.
Yeah.
I wish
one
you could.
One of those drop down menus.
I wish you could.
Create something awesome.
I wish you could, but not quite. But,
yeah. So Ajani Steadfast. So if you went looking for Chris Rahn, has he got links on site to?
Yeah, definitely. Just look up his name on Google. I'd say.
Yeah, and you get
same
the
with
full...
all the artists. And
do you know if he does all of his stuff as oil paintings? Because he's done a lot of magic artwork recently.
I'd guess so, but you know, you'd have to look it up yourself.
Yeah, because he did. Do you remember
really cool.
Huntmaster of the Fells? It was a red green werewolf from Dark Essentials, like a big mythic rare. It was one of the flip cards.
Yeah,
that really nice as well. And it's just kind of like the two parallels of this character. And I really like that. And thinking about it, it does look a lot more... His artwork does look a lot more traditional than the other ones, which are more digital based.
There was one, I can't remember now. It's like it was a blue card. It was in the last set.
Mm-hmm.
And something to do with birds or something like that. I can't
Hubris
quite remember.
Hour of Need, maybe. Turn stuff into sphinxes.
I can't remember now, but I watched that online. You know, it went from
how they did
it. Yeah, he sketched it in, and then he like painted it. And when I was looking at it, I just like Austin was saying, I initially, immediately thought, no, that's definitely he's going to digitally art it. So when I saw him sketched it and then slowly just oil painted it in, I was like, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. You know,
I mean, you know, no matter the medium, it's an amazing achievement. But even though like doing oil these days is like wow, like that's,
That's
crazy.
14 grand for a
painting. Yeah, I think it was around that much. Like,
but
I
said
nice
this
amount,
to my wife once. I said I'd rather have like it was just after the last Comic Con. You know, we'd seen one of the comic book artists in town. Yeah, I said I'd rather have that on my wall than any kind of
some shit.
Some stupid shit that you'd, you know your grandma's got on there
in a hotel.
Yeah. Black and white picture of London or some shit.
Yeah, like all the stuff that you know, like when they deck out an office, they just go and buy like. What's that Monet thing with the war lilies and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, or just like a sailboat or something.
With some Indonesian banged out in 30 seconds. We love our Indonesian friends, by the way.
Love them. Shout out to Indonesia.
Yeah. What are you finishing off with today?
Okay, number five, I've picked a female artist. It's Blood Host by Cynthia Shepherd.
It's always going to be
Cynthia
Shepherd.
Another black card.
She's a great one, yeah.
Austin, would you say that you were more inclined towards the black end of the spectrum magic, you know?
Why do you say that at all?
I don't know. Just looking around at the artwork, I wouldn't say it's like angelic. I wouldn't say angelic.
Oh, but, they're all cuddly little guys. Oh, I mean, you know, mind the blood and gore and guts and everything.
That guy's face is falling off. Angelic in his own way.
Cynthia Shepherd was responsible for the first card that I fell in love with, and I didn't like the artwork.
Oh, no.
And now I've got to try and desperately remember what the name of the card was, because I was so in love with it. It was one of the angels that gave... shit, we need a blob here, don't we? It was... What was that one?
Not Deathless Angel. That artwork is disgusting.
When you attack by yourself, you get bonuses for everyone else that has this ability.
I'm glad no one's looking at me.
It's got Exalted and all your creatures get Exalted.
Yeah, yeah.
Four mana.
Yeah.
I know what it's a.
Oh, man, I should have put this in the quiz.
4/3.
Jeez, let me think. Oh, I'm trying to think of
Austin, do you. Come on, it's on the tip of your tongue.
I know my cards, I just can't
think of it. Kian, come on.
From in the booth. What is it?
Pristine.
It's something angel, yeah.
I played this card.
Just tell us, quick.
Tell us. What's it called?
It's this dead air tongue. Oh, Kian's making way.
Kian's
waving from the production booth saying like he knows it. Anyway, probably wasted enough on that. Yeah. We'll get it in a minute.
But yeah, it's a great composition, and I love how it's like, you know, a subtle card where you have to look closer to check out what's going on. Like,
yeah, it's just a happy guy.
It's just,
look at him.
A guy sitting around with some vampires and like some victims. And
very like, Hannibal as far
really
as...
Really very Hannibal.
It'd be nice to have old friends around for dinner.
The spots of red really are quite eye-catching. So yeah.
I really want an altar of this with Hannibal as the main character.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah, all right, well, that's cool.
Awesome, man.
Now, Austin's got to get away and watch Guardians of the Galaxy in a minute. So, what the artist spotlight?
I'd love to talk a bit more about Peter Moorbakker.
What's that crazy bastard been up to?
Yeah, he's done a Kickstarter recently. It was called Moorbakker the Gathering. And he just, like, you know, set out like a basic Kickstarter to do some prints and playmats of exclusive Magic the Gathering art. Mm-hmm. He set the goal at about $8,000. It made over $46,000. It was like, you know, blow it out of the park. He did such a good job.
Forever.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like my memory's failing me today.
Yeah.
One of my favorite artists, he did Vampire Nighthawk and...
Jason Chan.
Yeah. I went looking for his artwork online and he's got this terrible site that falls over all the time. You can't get into it. And he's just totally inaccessible. And I'm just thinking, just raise your profile, man.
Yeah.
You know,
Pay someone some of your money to make a nice website for you. The internet
is such a good tool. Like, you've got to use it right. Yeah.
Because if I'd have gone and found his stuff, I would have bought a truckload of gear for him. Yeah. And that's just money in his back pocket for work that he's done. And surely that's okay, right?
Yeah, I don't want to slag off Jason Chan anymore because I really love his... He did Jace the Mind Sculptor. It's one of the most iconic...
I don't like where he's gone. I think he's changed it a little bit. I like his... older stuff.
He did. He was the artist at Grand Prix Singapore when I went last year.
Yeah,
and the queue for his booth was 5 hours.
Wow.
Which meant I couldn't. If I wanted to go get anything signed by him, I had to not play any events that entire day.
Yeah.
Literally just queue, and it was because he
was
doing
your media responsibilities, Aaron.
No, not me. And he was just
public face.
He was just doing altars like. Yeah. While everyone was waiting.
Wow.
Yeah. And every artist just takes slightly less time in the day, goes home and does them, comes back the next day, gives them more to people, does it again the next day. And he was just like doing them like very meticulously, looking really, really good. But 5-hour queue. Like, I couldn't get anything done by him. He's one of my favorite artists.
That's why I don't do any art at conventions. People always ask me, and I'm like, I'll do it at home.
Like, you know, like, email me, and I'll send it out to you. It might be a little bit more, but you'll get what you want, and you don't have to wait for
the All right, spotlight on Peter Moorbacher, by the way.
Anyway, Peter Moorbacher is doing great.
He's not a cockhead. Not a cockhead, is what we're saying.
It was a really great example of, you know, how to do a Kickstarter. Like, he collaborated with a lot of other artists too, like Noah Bradley, John Avon, all these great names. And he, you know, he sent out, like, you know, did the viral marketing thing really good. So it's just, like, really inspiring for artists like myself to, like, you know, who have their own little projects and, you know, other people to, like, you know, get on the Kickstarter and, you know, use online medium because it's a really great tool.
Is he doing another one as well?
He will be. He's,
why not?
I think
if he makes his 46 grand, he'll definitely do that again.
I think he's doing one later on about an art book called Heaven's Hell. That's Anthony Jones. He's doing one called, it's like Angelarium, I think. Right. It's like a whole bunch of different angels.
Tell that from the title.
He does a lot of it's like angels in an aquarium. Original art as well. But and he's also doing another magic one next year, I think, as well.
Yeah.
So definitely check him out online and follow him for more work.
Do you know about him running into trouble with Wizards of the Coast because he wanted to make big playmats of artwork that he'd done for them, and they're like, "We own that artwork. Yeah. We prefer you didn't do it." So he's just like, "I'll paint a new version of that artwork and do that as a playmat instead." One of his cards, one of his most famous ones, Animar, Soul of Elements,
One of the
like
gods,
a big, it's like looming above this landscape and stuff. Really awesome, would be a sweet playmat.
Yeah.
And was like, "You can't print that as a playmat. We own that image. Yeah. What if we want to print it as a playmat?" So he just did a different version of it from like a different angle.
Made a playmat. It's just mean spirited, isn't it? I mean, why not? I mean, you know, you're making a packet from the game. Why not let the artist get some money from
because
the
game? Because they're a huge driving force behind the game. Like, if the artwork was shit, it wouldn't be half
I think Magic have actually recently reiterated their whole stance on artists. They've changed their you know, contract laws and stuff, and they've actually. So it's better for the artist and they're getting more out of it.
That's good.
Because I was definitely not engaged in the game at all early on. And I think one of the key things was, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, like Dave and I were sitting around and we were looking at through books of art from other artists. And we were like, in this game, Magic, that we've been looking at, the same guys are doing it. He showed me a magazine with like big Raymond Swanland picture in it.
Raymond Swanland.
He's like, Raymond Swanland is in all these cards. And I was like, I'm in. I don't care what the game's about. I want to play with cards of Raymond Swanland on it.
Well, I mean, it's great that they, you know, credit the artist at the bottom of the card.
Yeah, it
like,
is, that's
for an artist like, you know, like myself, like, you don't realize how much of a deal that is. It's
huge. Yeah, it's like you're ghostwriting for everyone, isn't it?
You know? And so it's like you're really setting a precedent. Like, Magic are a great brand that are like, you know, showing people how to do it and treating artists how they should be treated.
A game I played recent. Oh, no. I was on an artist's DeviantArt or one of his websites or something, and he said, "Oh, this is my Magic art. This is artwork I did for another game." I was like, "Whoa, that's really cool."
Yeah,
went to go look at the game. Didn't credit the artist anywhere. They just put it in the credits, like vaguely. Scribbled at the bottom. And I was just kind of put off by that. Like, how are people ever going to be able to be like, "This is an amazing piece of artwork"?
And
ever be able to refer back to the artist for it? Like,
sure.
And Magic, I do that all the time. That's
all right. Yeah. Well, there's a galaxy needing to be guarded, and Austin's got to get to it.
Yep.
So thanks for dropping in, Austin.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure.
Have to come back in and give us a run through some of the other sweet picks cards, and maybe tell us a bit about your stuff in future.
Awesome.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Over and out.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. See ya.
Okay, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Sublime Archangel.
That's the one.
It's like I didn't even have to pause to think.
For 10 minutes while we all just pondered what
Jason
that card was called.
Chan. Those are my two things I have to remember.
Jason Chan.
Sublime Archangel.
Sure. All right, back
Please
to the
report
show.
To your seat.
You are late for your plane. Yeah. We are going to leave without you.
White phone for Jason Chan. All right, we've got a Color Pair Limited discussion.
Yeah, we're looking at the color pairs in limited, and then we can discuss it.
Draft archetypes. All right, guys. We're going to go through a few pairings here. And we're going to start with... I wonder who did this running order.
I don't know.
Starting with blue-white.
Blue-white,
just off the top.
The worst pairing ever.
don't make me come over there.
Okay, traditionally a tempo sort of play, blue-white. Has it gone out of character?
I think what they've done in M15 is really boiled each of the color pairings all the way down to their roots. So blue-white is like, it's going to be difficult for you to win with a blue-white deck that isn't a tempo deck. As in, you've got a lot of flyers at common, but they're fairly weak, not great at defending. So you need to remove their blockers, not be getting killed. And the best way to do that is to remove them either permanently or, you know, bounce them back to their hand. So you're going to be winning by killing them in a shorter amount of time.
Fugitive wizard.
Maybe not fugitive wizard. You want evasive flyers. You want like Welkin Tern. You've got stuff like Nimbus of the Isles, which are just flyers which you can just back up with some bounce spells. Maybe get a few guys on the ground.
Quickling.
Yeah. Just utility guys that you can just...
Yeah, see, when I started playing Magic, Welkin Tern we always used to laugh at, but it's quite a good card.
It's
really
good. It's quite strong, just because it doesn't...
Two drop that he's going to hit for two, and it's got flying. You can get in and do a lot of damage with that. So and you don't give a shit about the blocking thing.
Exactly. Like, say you're playing against Red-Green. Red-Green is going to have no way of dealing with that Welkin Tern outside of a lightning strike or a removal spell they're going to be using on something else. So you can get in for 10 damage with a Welkin Tern if you play it on turn 2.
Like, yeah. I have actually gone in for 12. with a single Welkin Tern, I got in for 12 damage and then was able to finish them off with two lightning strikes.
Yeah. It's just like not difficult to just back up some cheap flyers with like a bit of disruption. Maybe you'll draw some cards somewhere along the way, just so you're always slightly ahead of what they're doing while you're beating the crap out of them with a flyer or something.
So blue white, that's your strategy. Don't go looking for creatures. You're after tempo plays.
You can do it, but blue is not known for its wealth of diverse creatures. It's known for some flyers here and there, some guys that aren't very good at attacking on the ground, and some defenders.
Okay, blue-black. So again, traditionally boiled down to being a control deck?
Yeah, so blue-black is kind of in draft is an archetypal control color, which means you want the game to go long, and you're going to kill them with some...
Boredom.
They'll just scoop because they're sick of it.
Yeah, sick of playing. I only wanted to play Magic for 8 hours. This has gone too long.
You can use some of those blue tools, the card draw, the flyers, but instead of backing them up with creatures to gum up the ground and maybe some like return to their hand stuff, you've got actual kill spells instead. You've got stuff to generate card advantage. Blue and black, both are the best colors at that. And you have... small creatures and win conditions in black as well.
Yeah, like from the pack that we busted, the busted booster, with the rats. That's going to gum up the ground, like you said, isn't it? And it'll take up a lot of... Make the other person think, and that's cost you one swamp.
So you can't think of it as a control deck like you would typically in Constructed, where it's got a lot of sweepers, a lot of card draw, back it up with some planeswalkers, win with one unkillable threat. It's more of a defend yourself on the ground... Commit yourself to the long-term plan.
Yeah, one of the best cards for this deck is Accursed Spirit. You know, like, that's a common. You generally want two or three.
Yep.
You know, it comes down, can trade with something if you need it to, but, like, it just puts them on the clock. Like, it says, you need to deal with this, or in 6 turns, you're dead. If you have two, it's, like, 3.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a really solid card.
And it's easy to just be like, turn 3, Wall of Frost. It's a 0/7, taps a thing down that it blocks, so they're like, oh, I've got to stop attacking. And then you get in with Accursed Spirit, which is like a 3/2 Intimidate. It's just going to hit him for 3 every time. They're like, oh, stop, I got to attack, but you got a Wall of Frost. And it's that kind of thing. Like, you just... You make the game go long so you can kill them with your inevitable threats. Yeah.
So the black-red combo, what sort of deck's that?
Black-red, instead of the small creatures just kind of from black, which does have a small amount of...
You'd use the same sort of black creatures. Cards in this deck as you would in
black. Yep. The interesting thing is that the crossover of each of the colors in the pairings does slightly different things. So in black-red, you're going to be on a much more of an aggressive slant.
Right.
Black and red can both deal with creatures permanently, deal damage to the opponent, and you're going to just throw a few creatures down, maybe a little bit of flyers from black, but red's got solid, aggressive guys to just throw down and start hitting for
Are you
two,
leaning on
four,
red for a lot of removal and the black for the creatures?
Oh, does it work both. Like that? Red has a lot of small creatures that are going to get in very early, and black and red have the best removal in the game.
And, like, one of my favorite cards in this pairing is Covenant of Blood. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a card that I've been really impressed with. When I first saw the spoiler, I was like, this card's really bad. Mm-hmm. But, like, I've played draft decks with 3 of them and been perfectly happy.
Really?
Because, like,
three? Wow.
In a black red pairing, you've got a lot of one drops, a lot of two drops, a lot of three drops. So,
and so you can just convoke
a
lot faster.
Do you want to run over what Covenant of Blood does?
Yeah, so Covenant of Blood is six and a black.
So seven mana.
Yep. Seven, and you play three of them.
Yeah.
But okay. It's got convoke.
Oh, okay.
So you convoke it, deals four damage to target creature or player, and you gain four life.
Yeah.
And I've killed a lot of people with this card because...
What kind of speed?
Sorcery
speed.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like... It's definitely better than Lava Axe by a lot, you know, and it has that same feeling where they just get to a point you're just like, cool, you're dead. Yeah. You know, like, the game's just over.
And you just have to... Like, you don't need seven lands to play it.
Yeah.
You need three creatures. Like, even if it's just Typhoid Rats, by the end of the game, they've killed all your aggressive creatures. They try to start stabilizing on, like, four life. You just need to draw a Covenant of Blood, tap four lands, three creatures, just kill them.
Mm. Yeah.
What happens with creatures with Vigilance and Convoke?
So you, what you do with those is you generally attack with them,
yeah,
and then you can cast a spell in your second main phase by attacking them.
Yeah, yeah. So you generally end up taking a round off. You tap most of your creatures and spend whatever mana you've got.
It's one of the best removal spells at common. Black has the best removal spell at common, which is Flesh to Dust, which is just five mana, destroy target creature, can't be regenerated. But Covenant of Blood does a pretty similar thing. The creatures are pretty small in this set.
Yeah.
We saw one of Green's biggest creatures is a Charging Rhino.
Yeah.
That just gets killed by Covenant of Blood.
The only thing that Covenant of Blood can't deal with easily are mythics. So, like, the souls, you know, stuff like that. Occasionally, you've got things like the Twin Grove, which makes two of itself.
Oh, rare.
You can generally get one, but you can't get the other.
But almost every single card at Common and Uncommon can be killed by Covenant of Blood. So it's like a five mana removal spell, and you gain four life as well.
So it's a pretty high pick for a Common.
Pretty high pick, yeah. I saw people taking it very high at the Pro Tour this weekend.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good to see value cards in Common. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, shall we take a break from this for a bit of flavor text?
I think we can.
Yeah, and we'll come back and we'll do red, green, white, green, and some other sort of stuff.
Okay, flavor text, flavor text, flavor text, flavor text.
That was bad. I'm sorry.
Kian needs a line
to be able to bounce back up.
He needs to do something. He needs, I know, do drums or something like that. Anyway, if you haven't...
He's broken the shield again.
All right, we're going to play flavor text.
Flavor text.
I read the flavor off text. The text. No, I read the text off a card.
And tell us what it tastes like. No, we tell him what it tastes like.
Okay, sure. Yeah, by using the name of the card. So you've got to tell me what card this text is from. Okay, so pens at the ready if you need them. And here we go, and the flavor text number eight. This is the eighth flavor text we've ever played.
That's exciting. How many have I lost?
I think zero.
What? Because, that's crazy. I didn't know that before I asked you that question.
Now Kian's here. He's studying up.
He's actually studying up. Yeah,
he's studying up. And, you know, we know Aaron knows everything about every card.
I've never seen that. But also, I've never lost flavor text, so...
Clearly,
who knows whether it's true.
All right, here we go. Everyone just wants to get down to the competition.
Here we go.
Okay, so the travelers were warned to watch out for children on the road.
Oh!
The travelers were warned to watch out for children on the road.
I know exactly what the card is, but I don't know the name. Does that count?
Oh, the name is important because that is the answer that we're looking for.
The artwork looks like this.
Yeah. If you can draw it exactly,
I think
with
we'll
your
take
pink
that.
Pen. No, don't. We need the name, Kian. No screwing around. Right. Number two. Flavor text number two. His verdict is always guilty. His sentence is always death. His verdict is always guilty. His sentence is always death.
Oh, this one.
Ooh, that sounds heavy,
I kind of want to be like Judge's Familiar, but I know that's wrong.
Judge's Familiar.
Like a freaking owl.
His verdict is always guilty.
It's got Judge in the name, doesn't it?
If it had Death Touch, you'd be like, yes.
Yeah, that would be good.
An owl with Death Touch, that would definitely work for him.
Oh,
but no.
Phil, this one feels familiar. It's touching the edge of my brain.
I think by looking at the art, this is a lot more serious than Judge's Familiar.
Slightly more serious.
Yeah, yeah. His verdict is always guilty. His sentence is always death.
Lightning Strike.
Who are you talking about?
It's so hard to read these cards without... You know, we usually just say what the name of the card is and its power. It's so hard to look at them and ignore everything and go straight to the flavor text.
Yeah.
Anyway, here we go. This is flavor text number three. It would be ill-mannered to decline his invitation. It would be ill-advised to accept it. Ooh, very quickly down there. All right. And there is a theme, of course. So, you know, keep that in mind. There's always a theme. I can help you out with some of the answers sometimes. All right, are we all done?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I have the second one, but it might have too much text for it to flip to fit flavor text in there. So.
All right. Well, let's go see how we go. All right. So for the first one, the travelers were warned to watch out for children on the road. Aaron.
The answer is M13 card, 2 and a black, 2/2, creature type vampire. Sacrifice a creature. This creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. It's Bloodbane.
Okay. What have you got, Ken?
Bloodbane. I misspelt it horrendously. That's right.
Don't tell us that.
I think Aaron's actually given too much information because I read that off the M14 Bloodbane and you said M13.
It's not an M14. Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes,
I
it
remember.
Is. Controversy.
I remember.
Controversy. Sorry. I keep thinking that this set is M14. I keep calling it M14 because it's 2014 right now.
Yeah, I know. It's hard, isn't it? We should be an M14 now. No, it is. It's Bloodbane.
Yeah. I specifically remember this one because the artwork on that card is exceedingly creepy.
Yeah.
It's like a five-year-old child covered in blood and eating a finger.
Killed a whole bunch of people. Yeah. It's eating a finger.
I think so, yeah.
I've never noticed
eating
that.
Eating the leftover bits of travellers.
Jesus.
Who didn't watch out for children. Okay, so number two. So we've got, it's one all. Bloody hell, this is going to get tense, isn't it? I better start writing this down.
Dun, right. Dun.
A, one, K, one. Right, here we go.
This is not Battleships.
His verdict is always guilty. His sentence is always death. This could be the tiebreaker, couldn't it? I think because we're regulars now, we've got to go alternate. And then we'll go also Kian's got the blankest look on his face. that's pretty
bastard.
Normal. What have you got for number two, Kian?
I have some fearsome answer, otherwise known as question mark.
Question mark. Okay, we'll take that into consideration. See if Aaron can do worse. What have you got?
I don't want to give away the third answer by guessing one, so maybe I could just hedge and not answer. Oh, this is a mind game, David, you guys playing.
What are you going to
get? I'm worried I'll give away the theme if I say what my answer is. Okay. Blood Baron of Viscopa.
Okay, Blood Baron of Viscopa.
That card has no flavor text.
I didn't think it did. That's unfortunate.
I think that fits, but that card has no flavor text.
It's neither. It's not question mark. It's not Blood Baron of Viscopa. It's Butcher of Malakir.
Where was that from?
It's from World Wake.
It's 5 and 2 swamps. It's a creature.
Aaron,
it's a vampire warrior. It's got flying. Whenever Butcher of Malakir or another creature you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, each opponent sacrifices a creature.
It's like a 5/4 with flying.
5/4 with flying, that's it.
It's like that would have been insane.
No, because the format was really fast. You couldn't play 7 drops.
Really?
Yeah, it was too fast to play that. And that card is ridiculous.
Man. Sweet Jason Chan art as well.
Oh, it's so
back
good.
From when he was gritty. Yeah. Okay, for the final one, no one scored anything, so it's still 1-1. It would be ill-mannered to decline his invitation. It would be ill-advised to accept it. I get the feeling you both got this one right.
Yeah, it's the Hannibal card that we just talked about earlier. Bloodhost.
Bloodhost. Bloodhost, yeah, it's Bloodhost. Yeah, I was so gutted when Austin brought our attention to that. But that's all right. We got so we're drawn up on 2-0.
Oh, no, Kian, a fearsome competitor.
I'm coming for you, Mr. Graham.
I thought the theme was things that have blood in the name, but I went for the
It almost
theme.
Was. Okay, so back to the limited discussion on color pairing.
Mm-hmm.
We're up to red green. Red green.
Yeah.
What do they get up to?
So red green typically the biggest like ground pounder colors.
Yeah.
They've got the biggest heaviest hitting creatures. Green obviously has the biggest. Red's got a lot of support for that kind of thing. It's got some burn spells. It's got some big dudes, and it's got some dragons as well. So the way that red-green gets its advantage, because it doesn't draw cards, it's not that great at removing other creatures, is it plays fat things quickly before you can deal with them.
Gets wrecked by Typhoid Rats.
This strategy is all destroyed by Death Touch creatures.
Red's always been strong for haste, So does red help out in this set as far as getting green cards
it
out?
It does. I've played red-green a couple times in draft. I don't think it's the strongest color pairing just because of stuff like... It gets very easily disrupted by a Typhoid Rats or something.
Also, only has two... Like, green only has 2 ways to interact with flyers in its entire colors.
Oh, my God.
Apart from, like, rares and stuff.
Fuck.
Because you've only got... got Plummet and Netcaster Spider.
Or you got Hunt the Weak, I guess. You punch
Cyborg,
them out of there.
Cyborg cards. So you're only going to play it. You're going to lose the first game.
Netcaster Spider's pretty good. It's a 2-3 with reach for 3 mana.
Because you're in green, you can main deck Plummet, and I have.
Because your weak to flyers got to have a
Oh, man. I'd be feeling very unhappy if I was main decking Plummet.
Yeah, me too. Like when you have to main deck like a Naturalize, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
And then they play Spectral Ward, and you're like, yes!
Yeah, but that never happens. No one ever plays Spectral Ward when I've got Naturalize in my hand.
Do you know it's not never actually happens. Spectral? It's Spectra.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. Yeah. Spectra Ward. Because it's Spectra of Light.
I always hear it as
Spectral.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else
for
red-green?
Yeah, red-green. So this green's got things to jump your mana, Elvish Mystic. It's got
things to jump your nana.
Things to like myself. So it's going to be getting those things out early. It'll kill some things with some red removal spells. Then it'll play some giant green things. Really,
Curd Chieftain is fantastic. Yeah.
Each one of these color paintings that we've talked about has the uncommon that's so in white. It's gets +1/+1 if you control an island, and then it's got a blue. Activated ability, we talked about them last week, the off-color activation cycle, the OCAX. Red-green's OCAC particularly good.
I still think
Nightfire Giant is better, but like...
I think Curd Chieftain's better.
Really?
Yeah, I think Curd Chieftain's better.
Ooh.
Go on, why?
Okay. So Nightfire Giant's... Oh, actually, well...
Stick to your guns, Aaron.
I haven't even said anything. I've already won this argument.
Like, Nightfire Giant's ability... I've had my opponent have Nightfire Giant against me, and they don't really want to tap 5 mana for it because, like, it's either only going to kill a 2-2, or it's going to kill an X1, or just deal 2 damage to your face. Curd Chieftain's ability, you have threat of activation like a lot more. So you can attack with it, have mana for Curd Chieftain's ability, which gives +2/+2 and trample to a creature. You can have that mana up. They're like, I can't afford to block that. So you get attacks in for free. It's similar to Nightfire Giant, but I just think the way that it affects combat is much better.
I think Nightfire Giant is slightly better because that big size of a creature in black and red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, a 5-mana 5/4 is huge in those colors. It outclasses everything that isn't green, and it even outclasses most of those.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you're in red, so you've got tricks like Crowd Fervor, which means you can always get it through, and, like...
Necrobite?
Yeah, like, just stuff like that. Yeah. Hold on, can you necrobite and then...
But you need 8 mana to do that. That's ridiculous.
Darren a servant.
Sure.
White green.
So white-green.
White-green.
So white-green is the... Convoke in this set is mostly based around white-green.
And if you have the deck, it's just so scary. Like,
it's really, really scary.
It's a deck that, like, you need to have 2 or 3 pieces in 2 or 3 multiples. But if you have it, I don't actually think you can be beaten unless you play someone who's black and has multiple Festa Glooms.
Like, is white creating a lot of tokens?
Yes. That's the way. This one's pumping out Convoke spells very early by playing things like Raise the Alarm, which is common. Just put 2/1/1 soldiers into play at instant speed for 2 mana. So they attack with a 2/1.
So that's just not 2 off the price of anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And you've got stuff like Siege Worm, which is premium common. Seven mana usually for a 5/5 with trample.
Played it on turn 4.
But it's got
more than once.
So you just like play Raise the Alarm, play a 3-drop, fourth turn you play a 5/5 with trample.
And if it was like a Midnight Guard, which you then get to untap and attack with, yes.
There's a lot of support for this color combo. This archetype doesn't exist in every format, but this one is like, I've called it a wide strategy.
Yeah.
Hang on, are we talking about white-green being a threat now?
Yeah.
Shit.
That's crazy.
I know.
Selesnya got your back.
I thought we were just urinating on white-green from a great height.
Wizards have been for many years.
Yeah.
They printed Voice of Resurgence and then snatched it away.
Tandris.
But now, like, draft format, I really like this color pairing. It's got white's small amount of removal, but the fact that you can just get these draws where they can't
the problem is, like, Wizards knew the Triplicate Spirits was going to be the best common in the set. And it is. Like, Triplicate Spirits is Double white, four colorless with Convoke. Create 3/1/1 spirits with flying.
It's just so, like, yeah. Someone plays that against me, I'm like, oh, I've got to deal with all three of those things.
Like, it's just insane.
Yeah.
And as part of that, there is Festa Gloom in the set, which just completely wrecks it.
Do you main deck Festa Gloom?
I have main decked it once or twice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's never like, oh man, I'm going to start with this card in my deck.
I'm really excited to pick one up in draft for my sideboard, though, because I'm just like, sweet, I got a good game against these white decks that are like Swift Claw, Raise the Alarm, Triplicate Spirits, and then I'm just like, Festa Gloom, wipe your entire board.
This deck to me feels a lot like what Grey Merchant did in Triple Terrors. Like, Triplicate Spirits, Grey Merchant. Like,
it's like a synergy deck.
Yeah. When you open it, are you the guy that slams the Grey Merchant, hopes to get past another, or do you pass it because you know the chances of someone getting two are so low? The thing is, if they have three or four, the game's over.
But, like, Grey Merchant was good in most black decks, but wasn't good in every black deck. Yeah. But you play Triplicate Spirits in every white deck, though.
This is true.
Yeah.
I can't believe Triplicate Spirits is a common.
It's a common! Like,
if you get a couple of those,
I know.
You're casting this for next to nothing if you keep hold of your spirits for more than
enough. Was Lingering Souls?
Lingering Souls was uncommon.
Okay.
And that still destroyed that draft format. It was way too strong. One of the best sealed decks I've ever seen was a white-black Dark Ascension deck that just had two copies of Lingering Souls in it. Just because making 1/1s with flying every turn is just like, it's such a like, oh, stop attacking me with 1/1s with flying. And it just gets there so often. Yeah. Even if you make, in a pinch, three chump blockers, that's going to buy you a whole bunch of turns.
Has Green got any tricks as far as instant speed boosting?
Titanic Growth.
Yeah, it's got Titanic Growth.
Titanic Growth,
so +4/+4 for 2 mana.
And Gather Courage.
It's got Gather Courage, uncommon.
Man. So if you attack with 3 spirits, they're all coming in flying. It's not likely that they've got 3 people to block it. And then you just Titanic Growth for the last minute.
Yeah, you can 7, 8, 9.
Sanctified Charge is actually really common. Like, I've lost to that a lot.
Yeah. Card I'm most scared of in this set.
Yeah, like as soon as
and this is a white trick.
Yeah. Sanctified Charge.
Sweet art in that one.
4 colorless and a white. Creatures you control get +2/+1. White creatures get first strike. And
why did you need to add that last bit? Yeah. It would have been good anyway.
And like, I've been playing against a lot of Triplicate Spirits deck. And as soon as they play Triplicate Spirits or even Raise the Alarm, you're like, okay, if they have this, what can I do about it? And a lot of times it's just nothing.
Yeah. The other day, someone attacked me with a bunch of white creatures and had 5 mana up. I'm like, I can't block.
Yeah.
If he has Sanctified Charge, I lose my entire board. He's got 5 creatures out still. I was just like, leave it, go to 4. He didn't even end up having it, but I was just like, you have to live in fear of something insane like that. Giving
he's
your
just
entire
hitting everything. Three power and first strike. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no.
So in the right hands and the right cards, white green all of a sudden.
White green, yeah.
Bang. But it is always going to be overdrafted because if there's a common, you open and you slam, it's Triplicate Spirits.
And Lightning Strike.
And there's not a lot of removal for white green, so you're just trying to beat them with...
it's like a synergy. It's like a synergy deck. You play some tokens, convoke out some spells a bit faster.
Yeah.
Hopefully you run them over before they start doing whatever they're doing.
The green-white decks I've had the most success with have had 3 or more of these cards. Siegeworm and Seraph of the Masses. So you need...
Yeah, I haven't played Seraph of the Masses yet.
Really good.
Oh, okay.
You need to have 3 of those because they're just big fatties that finish the game and work really well with Raising Alarm and Triplicate Spirits. And the thing is, like, sometimes those cards just don't get there. Like, sometimes you cast Raise the Alarm, it's like, insane. You win the game the next turn or whatever. Mm. And sometimes you cast and it's like, cool, they have two 4/4s.
You have some 1/1s now.
Yeah. So, like, you need those big fatties. And, you know, Siegeworm is quite hard to get. And Seraph of the Masses is uncommon. So, sometimes they don't even get opened.
All right. So, to finish off this theme of discussion, we've got a few of the, like, the off-color pairs, really.
Mm-hmm.
White-black. White-black.
Yeah. So we've had a look at the 5 color pairings, the friendly ones.
Yeah.
And they've gone under that. So blue-white's a tempo deck. Blue-black is a control deck. Black-red's aggressive. Red-green is ramp. Yeah. White-green is weenies slash kind of synergy kind of thing. So the other color pairings are really interesting in this set. Like, white, but what's white-black? White-black's like enchantments and stuff, isn't it? There's like an enchantment
like
sub-theme.
Life gain, because there's a couple of cards that give you benefits from having life gain in white.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's a good amount of life leak in both.
Yeah, we saw one, didn't we, in the Bust Booster, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anything else with white black to look out for that you?
Yeah, like anything synergistic? Where does it kind of fall? It's kind of a weird, aggressive deck that has control elements to it.
Blood Host is very good.
Blood Host, yeah. So black white tokens, black and white both have a lot of ways to sacrifice creatures to get excess things. It's got some card draw in black. Yeah. It's kind of like you're just taking the best bits of both of them, but it's not a particularly...
It's not a synergistic color. Yeah. It's not like blue-red.
You're just trying to go for like raw power. Yeah.
So what's blue-red got?
Artifact matters.
Yeah, blue-red is the artifact matters. So there's slightly more artifacts in this set than there would be normally. And it kind of falls in the aggressive camp, right?
Yeah, like a good blue-red deck is very scary. It's just, you know, like... it's got like Scrapyard Mongols. Frostlinkers, Aranor Tinkerers, like Welcome Turns, like it's hitting you in evasive ways with blue, and it's hitting you with
Red's suite of burn spells, which is very good in this set.
Also, like this applies to any red deck, Cone of Flame. If you open Cone of Flame and don't pick that card. I hope there's a mythic in that pack, because so otherwise you're doing it wrong.
Cone of Flame, I think it's impossible to play around it. 3 damage to a creature, 2 damage to a creature, 1 damage to a creature. It's just like, you get 3 for ones with it. It's unheard of in modern limited play.
It's so good.
Garrick's gone evil. He's taken on black. Black-green. What are we doing with black-green?
So this one's... it's got a slight graveyard sub thing, but it's not that prevalent.
So you've opened the pack. Garrick's there. Windmill Slam. Playing black-green.
Yeah.
So now what are you looking for?
Now you're just looking for ways to get there to cast your Garrick. You're also looking for ways to fill up your graveyard. That's with Death Touch creatures. Your
Necromancer's Assistant, Wayfinder.
All things that kind of mill you a little bit, and then black has a lot of Convoke commons and uncommons where you can reload your hand with stuff that's been in your graveyard. Yeah,
I got wrecked by this in the last Super Series trial.
Oh, did Hayden beat you in the
draft? Yeah, he beat me in the first round of the draft, and his deck was just so insane.
You can see Hayden in action in our Super Series number 4 qualifier video.
Coming out soon.
Yeah. And... like, the good thing about this strategy is when you play, like, say, the Wayfinder, and he had 5 of them, if you have multiple ways to get your cards out of your graveyard, it makes your deck way more consistent.
Yeah.
Because you play, say, the Wayfinder, you get the card you want in your graveyard, and you get it back.
Yeah.
He had other cards like Soul of Innistrad and stuff that, like, just meshed it all together. But,
it was a good, really good deck. I think it falls more in the control side.
Yeah. It was definitely a long game kind of deck, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we were saying with that one, the longer the game went, the more I was like, it's out of control for his opponent. Like, there's no way.
So much card advantage. It was ridiculous. Exactly. You know, your opponent eventually is down to top decking and you've got 3 or 4 cards in your hand. You're always going to win that game.
Late game, Unmake the Graves is divination where you pick what you draw.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do that instant speed. Yeah.
So say the board's gummed up. You're just like, yeah, cool. I'll just get these 2 creatures back in my graveyard and play them next turn.
Yeah. All right. Boros, red white. How those guys going? Red white flag.
I'd rather not. I'd rather just wave the white flag with red and white.
Just wave the white flag and give up.
Yeah, give up.
I like to call this the Aura Matters pairing. It doesn't come up as often because there's only 1 or 2 cards that help it come together. But I've seen it come together. I didn't do it, but I saw it come together in a draft, and he just 3-0'd it.
I did it online. First M15 draft I did. Red-white auras. You build it around some uncommons.
What are you going to aura?
Broodkeeper. So Broodkeeper is 3 and a red for a 2/3 human. Whenever an aura becomes attached to it, put a 2/2 dragon into play with fire breathing. Pay red, give it +1 attack till end of turn.
This is a complete little tangent side note, but like, can you imagine if this card had been in Theros? Like,
it would be not
Theros block, but just like Theros itself. Oh, like, can you imagine bestowing this guy?
That
and you're
would
like,
be insane.
It would have been way too good.
Here's a 2/2 dragon. Here's a 2/2 dragon.
Oh wait, the original guy has lifelink. The original guy has vigilance. The original guy has trample. Yeah. Oh, and here's take 6 from.
I've got this massive tower of death
and all of these dragons. Dragons.
Khaleesi.
Should have called it Khaleesi. That would have been a sweet card.
Yeah.
So red white. So white's also got a few ways to search for auras from your deck. White's also got like +2/+2 on vigilance auras,
which is surprisingly good. Like, when I first saw that, I was like, "That's not very good." And then I'm like, that's pretty good.
Because there's less instant speed removal in this set than there's ever been. And a lot of it's damage-based. So if you put +2/+2 and Vigilance on a 3-3, not much is going to kill that outside of
I've seen it being suited up on Sungrave's Pegasus a lot. And that's scary.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's like, take three, I'll gain three. Take three, I'll gain three. Take three, oh, wait, I'm dead.
Yeah, this one falls more in the kind of tempo, aggressive
thing. This deck doesn't show up much, but when when the stars align and the pieces fall together,
it's really strong.
Yeah.
Okay, so to finish off, blue-green. How are we getting into blue-green?
Blue-green, it's another one of those raw power ones. The stuff doesn't synergize that well. You've got flyers and big stuff on the ground. You've got stuff to bounce stuff to their hand. And you're trying to control with a big thing. You control them a bit, but
it's also not going to come up that much. Mm. So blue is sweet. Like, I actually really love blue in this format, but it is one of the weaker colors.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a bunch of commons that aren't very good, like Fugitive Wizard, Statute of Denial, you know, stuff like that. So,
oh, yeah. So when you open a majority of M15 packs, the blue cards are all just like mediocre.
So it's taking a step back from last year.
I'm glad, though. Last year, Divination was the best blue common because the format was so slow. Take a turn off, draw some cards. You're going to be ahead of them. In this format, you like Divination, and they like put an aura on their thing and make a dragon, and you're like,
maybe. I think I've said M14 was when I thought, I see how you play blue, and that looks like fun. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was good.
Yeah. M14 was very good because it boiled down the colors, and like it really showcased what old blue used to be like, where the spells mattered, and you played a couple of flyers.
Play
and
a
that's
long
how you,
fucking game. Whereas, and kill people with like a 2/5 crab. Yeah. Like, you just defend with your 2/5 crab until the game goes so long that you start attacking with your 2/5 crab, and they're like, don't do that. That's just demoralizing.
10 rounds to go.
Only 10 rounds to go. Attack you for two. Attack you for two. They're like, I don't want to block.
whereas with M15, it feels like blue is much more modern. Like it's what it is now.
Yeah, you got like temporary bounce spells. You've got stuff that keeps tapped stuff tapped like indefinitely, but it's all kind of situational. Whereas before you got like instant speed bounce spells, you've got like
claustrophobia,
ways to just remove stuff permanently. Now it's and really good counter spells, but there's no good counter spell in this block.
I mean, there is. It's at uncommon though, so it's not going to come.
Oh, dissipate. Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that one.
All right. Well, I think that was really good. I enjoyed that. That was a good discussion. So I feel like I've leveled up. And now we can come back after this with an MTG card quiz so you can level up and take it out.
Hold on.
Two all.
We have to do something first.
What's that?
Ding! You've leveled up.
Hey. Oh, yeah. That's what you want.
MTG card quiz 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Well, he was supposed to do the drums. We gave Kian an
You had instrument. One job. You had one job, Kian, and he just missed it.
Shall I deduct him a point?
Yeah, all right.
No!
2-1 to Aaron.
Yeah. All right, it's 2-all as we go into MTG card quiz. We've got three heavy questions coming up.
Aaron, look in my eyes.
No,
as you
I can't.
Die.
I can't.
I've gone a little bit different for the MTG card quiz this what can we say, month?
Oh, yep.
Yeah, this is MTG general knowledge.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah,
that's rough.
Because he knows everything about cards, but nothing about magic.
I might lose.
This you'll get the flavor of this as soon as we bust out the first question.
Sure. Pro Tour.
All right, you ready? Question one. In 2013, a regular print magic card sold for a record price. What was the card? And before you get too excited, what was the price? Now, I'll give a point to the person who gets it closest to the correct price. So in 2013, a regular print magic card sold for a record price. What was the name of this card and what was the price?
Can only one person like get the price of it? Like it's like, is it this or above up to the other person's one and then that or above?
The person who's closest to the price of the card will get a point for that. You'll get a point
so
for the name.
So only one person can get it unless we guess the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. What? Well, unless you guess exactly the same price, Aaron.
Yeah.
But, okay. my question is like,
oh my
by
God.
Regular print, do you mean like...
Oh, that's like all, it's all in the question, kid.
Like
I know what he means.
Picture print?
I know
like,
what he means.
It's not a promo card.
Yeah, that's very important.
So are we talking like the artwork sold in an eBay auction?
No,
it's a
regularly printed Magic card.
A box standard card out of a pack that you just bought.
Yeah.
And someone bought it.
I don't know what the... I think it's like...
In
now listen, I thought I worded that question rather well.
Yeah, no, it was. I completely understand what you're saying.
Yeah, good. Well, it looks like Aaron's going. All right, so in 2013, a regular print Magic card sold for a record price. What was the card... What was the price? Right, moving on to question two.
Hold on. Yeah.
Right. Within the Magic the Gathering universe, which plane was described by Wizards of the Coast as inspired by Celtic mythology, which shifts from utopic and bucolic paradise to a shadowy and creepy land of darkness? Within the Magic the Gathering universe, which plane was described by Wizards of the Coast as inspired by Celtic mythology, which shifts from a utopic and bucolic paradise to a shadowy and creepy land of darkness?
Ooh.
Take a stab at it.
I actually
at least.
Think I've got this one.
All right.
It's really easy, that's why.
Ooh. Well, I mean, the obvious answer is Innistrad, but I think that's wrong.
Okay, question three. And I'm a bit worried about this because I've liquid papered something out. So as I read this, it might get it wrong. Right. In 1998.
Sure.
That was around when both of you were born.
Dude, I was four.
In 1998, PGI Limited was shut out of Gen Con by Wizards of the Coast. Because they had produced a parody of Magic the Gathering. What was the name of this parody game?
Oh.
In 1998, PGI Limited was shut out of Gen Con by Wizards of the Coast because they'd produced a parody of Magic the Gathering. What was the name of this parody game?
There you go.
That's NTG fun. General knowledge.
I like this one. I really like the quiz where
something
you asked us, like, what is the weight of a magic card? I was like,
I remember that.
16 kilograms.
I was like 0.6 of a gram. And you're like, that's ridiculous. That's not a weight.
I don't know what a gram is.
We didn't know what a gram or an ounce was. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh.
And there was numbers in front of
that. I remember listening to that one. It was so funny. That was Ash, right?
Yeah.
You both got horrendously wrong.
I'm pretty sure Ash got closer, though, because I was like 0.1 of a gram, and that's not a weight of anything, apparently.
A nanometer.
A nanometer. Graham.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So question one. I think we'll start off with Kian on this one because you went first last time.
Sure.
In 2013, a regular print Magic card sold for a record price. What was the card, Kian?
I'm pretty sure it's just like Black Lotus or Underground Sea.
You can't have an or.
Okay.
You've got to lock one in. What are we locking in?
Black Lotus, and I'm going to say...
Don't say the price yet. Aaron?
Black Lotus.
And the answer is Black Lotus.
Yes.
Sweet. All right. Now...
PSA like graded... 9 grade.
Yeah, no, like,
or something.
I'm thinking it was like
9.5 grade, yeah. Yeah, like literally someone pulled out of the booster with gloves expecting to get a Black Lotus and immediately put it in like a sealed thing.
Yeah.
Like
you
I
can't
mean, the,
get them
the
any
thing
more
was,
pristine
the
and
thing
put it away for 20 years.
Yeah. The thing that probably happened is they just cracked a pack. Like, someone randomly just had a pack.
Yeah, found some
set.
At a store or something.
Yeah, and just cracked it.
And was
Black
prepared
Lotus.
To the... open something like that
yeah.
and immediately put it in.
Yeah.
Just like, I feel like I pick cards up from the table and I scratch the edges with my fingernails.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
make the cards from better material than they used to. Like, I would just have destroyed one of them.
All right, Black Lotus. So I think everyone would have got that, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Kian, what price did you would you pay for a pristine Black Lotus?
I'm going to put
in 2013. 9,000 on the nose.
This is partially because I know Black Lotus is on the buy list here for like 3 and a bit grand.
Mm-hmm. Right. Aaron.
Okay, this one I was astounded by. I remember reading about it, but I don't remember. It was way more than a regular Black Lotus, which is about $5,000-$6,000. I think it's about $60,000.
$60,000.
On a small sub note, I remember starting to play Magic when I was in high school. Like, that's when I first started. Mm-hmm. I did start a bit earlier, but it was just with my brother. But that's when I played with more than one person.
Sure.
And, like, we were really excited when we found out what the most expensive card was. And yeah. It was Black Lotus. And at the time, it was worth $900.
Oh, ooh. God.
And that was only like 10 years ago.
Like, you hear about people trading those lands as we trade, like, basics now. Because they're like, why would I want a land that just makes two colors? That's shit. I'll just put a swamp and an island in my deck. Why would I need an island swamp?
No,
like, and people just trading them for, like, Shivan Dragon and stuff?
People used to just throw away Mox.
Oh.
Because they weren't worth anything. When the sets came out, Moxen were worth like 50 cents. So people would just open packs, have like 3 Moxen, just throw them away.
Okay, we're losing momentum on the quiz. Right. So, Kian, you've gone for 9 grand. Aaron's gone for 60 grand. Ooh. The answer is $27,302.
So I win because I'm closer.
Kian gets the point. So you both get one for the Black Lotus, and oh. Kian gets one for the price and hits the lead.
Oh, no. This
to be fair, though, my price was a third.
His price was a third of it. Like, I had the right, like, you know, tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. Yeah.
I think I should definitely get a point.
No, you lost. Okay, you can still come back.
I also wrote down Voice of Resurgence, and I was like, that's really dumb.
Voice of Resurgence.
Voice of Resurgence.
Someone paid $17 for it.
Well, no, like, Voice of Resurgence peaked at, like, $100.
Bucks. Was it $100 or
something? Yeah, foils were worth, like, $250 for a while.
Wow.
Jace is worth, like, $650.
Oh, okay, Jace. Keeping up the tempo, guys. Sure. All right. Within the Magic the Gathering universe, which plane was described by Wizards of the Coast as inspired by Celtic mythology, which shifts from a utopic and bucolic paradise to a shadowy and creepy land of darkness? Aaron,
this
what have
was,
you gone?
Do you want backstory or you just want the answer?
Give us the backstory afterwards, just in case you're wrong and look foolish. It's
Lorwyn.
Right. What have you got? Kian.
I actually have Onslaught.
Onslaught. And the answer is... Lorwyn.
Yeah, I thought so. I didn't Poor play all. During that block, so
backstory is like they wanted to do, they didn't used to release a core set every year, so instead of where the core set was, they're like, let's do like a fourth set, like something random that we haven't done before. And then Mark Rosewater's like, oh, let's do two different worlds, but one is like a shadowy version of the other one. So there were 4 sets in that block, and it was just like 1,000+ That's cards. Right. So many cards. But just like, literally just like evil versions of the things that were in the first one. Yeah. So, that's that one.
I hope they do something like that again. Like, where they replace the core set with something. Because, don't get me wrong, I love a core set every year.
I think I love the core set enough. I'll just have it
and
every
it's
year.
And it brings
but would you be okay if
so
they
well.
Just took a break? Like, say, instead of 2016... There's another set, and
it's what they used to do, and it just diminishes. Yeah. Like there's too many new players; they can't do that nowadays.
Yeah, maybe.
It literally just like huge waves of new players come in when the core set comes out. And,
this is true.
They'll do it with stuff like Modern Masters, Conspiracy.
Yeah,
that's where they release the interesting stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Question 3, and what are we on? It's 4-all.
4-all.
This is a tiebreaker, guys.
Yeah.
I haven't got any other questions, so this could be the first time. All right, in 1998, PGI... No, this is good, because Ken's got nothing for this, I'm pretty sure. In 1998, PGI Limited was shut out of Gen Con by Wizards of the Coast because they had produced a parody of Magic the Gathering. What was the name of this parody? Ken, what have you got?
The Gathering of Magic.
The Gathering of Magic.
Oh, that's just the backwards name of it.
Yeah, so that's a stupid parody name,
sure.
Right?
Well, I'll say that's wrong. I think we all know that. Aaron,
oh, no.
For the win.
That was my guess, too.
FTW, have you got it?
I think I've heard of this before.
Yeah.
I think.
Right.
What's it called? Tragic the Blathering.
Oh, it's so close but wrong. It's Havoc the Bothering.
Oh!
Havoc the Bothering. Havoc. They spelt it
Havoc,
like Havoc.
The Bothering. No!
Oh my god.
Tragic the Blathering, I think, was someone making fun of magic in some other way.
We've tied up.
Oh,
wow.
Surely my answer was close enough to that.
Shut up.
For the first time, Aaron, you haven't won, but drawn.
No!
Still undefeated.
That's what counts.
Aaron and Kian, Standard Edition.
Yeah.
Aaron and Kian, Standard Edition?
Aaron versus Kian.
Aaron versus Kian, Standard Edition.
It's like
edition.
The new Versus deck.
It's like Versus.
Oh, right. I see.
We're going to discuss some topics that we disagree on.
Oh. Ooh, feisty.
And today we're talking about Standard, so Standard Edition.
All right.
Well, it's not going to be the Standard Edition. It's always going to be Aaron versus Kian.
Epic Edition.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's kick it off.
Dun-dun.
What have we got to say about Garruk? Apex Predator.
And Garruk is the best planeswalker in the set.
to ever have existed. Yeah, what are your reasons for that?
In M15.
My
thing for it is they don't make bad planeswalkers be the face of the set.
Oh.
Chandra.
So it's purely a marketing reason.
No.
It's not the card.
It's both. I'll back it up. I'll back it up after the marketing.
I'm starting to disagree with you already, and you're supposed to be giving me the reasons why.
Hold on.
Back you up.
Objection.
No. let the man with the fuzzy hair speak.
Okay. He costs seven, but because he's the top, he's the pinnacle of deck.
He's the apex.
He's the apex of your deck.
Yeah. Sex predator.
he costs seven. You're going to ramp him out with Caryatid and Courser of Crufix. Make sure you hit your land drops in time. He's going to come down, punch Elspeth to death, and then make beasts until the cows come home or the beasts come
home. Remember, this is standard edition. Okay, standard, so he's taking on Elspeth. All right, Kim, what's problems with that argument?
Garruk is really powerful. Like, I'm not going to say that there's not. Plus one killer planeswalker is absurd. But everything I've seen of M15 so far has sped up the format. So, like...
Objection.
Shut up. Let him speak.
Sustain.
No. You know, like, Stoke the Flames, Goblin Rabble Master have given Red these really powerful options which help them get through the green Sylvan Caryatids and Coursers of Crufix. So those cards that were... Because Sylvan Caryatid and Courser of Crufix were kind of locking out aggro decks. Because you go two, on turn two you play a 0/3, and on turn three you play a 2/4. And aggressive decks is like, well, you know, shit, what do I do from here? And I feel like M15 has given decks some options around that, which makes Garruk not directly worse, but indirectly worse, because there's less
too
time
expensive
for you to get up there.
Yeah.
I feel like Desecration Demon is probably just better because it puts them on an instant clock and, you know, just requires an answer.
Mm-hmm. And Desecration Demon's with us for how long? Until October?
3 months, yeah.
Like,
2 months now.
So is it going to change? Is your opinion going to change after that? Is it going to
yes,
be different? Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the format post-rotation, if Karns doesn't do something ridiculous, is going to be slower. By
right,
a lot.
So you think it's the fastest that it's going to be with M15, but not with Karns?
Yeah.
Out? Yeah. I understand that, but Riposte.
Yeah.
I am saying it's the best planeswalker in Standard because I think that Nissa is quite overrated.
Is it better than Elspeth, though?
I said best planeswalker in the set.
You said Standard before.
I said in the set. We'll be able to listen
standard
back to
edition.
It. Standard edition.
In the set, Garruk, high five, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I said it was the best planeswalker in the set to begin with. I didn't say in Standard.
In the middle, you misspoke and said in Standard.
Oh, maybe you're missing the feel of the whole set,
which is Standard Edition.
I think we've said that maybe eight times now.
But he's the best planeswalker in the set for Standard applications. That's clearly what
you
I'm
can't implying. Wiggle out of this.
Good lord, this is as hard as doing the quiz.
I've wiggled my way out successfully. Oh. I think we can all agree. All
right, Jace the Living Guild Pact. The shittest name. It annoys me, this name. I know you did the backstory the other week.
Still not good.
It still annoys me. Yeah. Kian, Jace.
J the LG. Man, he switched
J the LG. To the L to the G. It's Jace. Right.
Oh.
He's a rapper.
That made me feel a little bit sick.
Yeah. How's things in Jace's hood?
I don't think Jace is terrible.
Doing drive-by shootings on all of the green cards.
But...
Looking at his hand.
Yeah, look at the bling on that hand. Yeah.
He is wearing a hood.
Yeah.
He's in the hood.
Very good.
I was implying, you just had to say it.
Yeah.
All right, so actual facts. Jace the Living Guild Pack. Where are we at with this guy?
Good in mono blue, bad in everything else.
I mean, and this is never anything to go, but in the Fat Pack, I think they rated him at second as the top 10
second
cards.
Second coolest card.
Yeah, but like, if we look back at Future Sight, Tamagoyf wasn't even in the top 10.
Yeah, and it's like $150 now. Yeah, that's
yeah, well, I did say it wasn't necessarily the best
like
guide.
$250.
Yeah. Jace the Living Guild.
Garruk was number one. And this is number three. Oh. All right, enough of that. So, do we cover that? What are you, pro or con?
He says it only goes in one deck.
In the deck that uses Jace, it's amazing because it's a huge tempo play. It smooths out your draws. If you ever manage to ultimate, I don't know how your opponent wins the game, you know, and that's probably what a Planeswalker ultimate should be. But, like, for the moment, if I'm playing Esper Control, America Control, more blue decks, I'm just going to be playing Jace the Architect of Thought. But I definitely think he has a home. Like, I probably would have preferred Baby Jace, Jace Bellerin, but he's still a really sweet Jace, has really powerful effects. He just doesn't go in the decks that typically Jace goes into.
I think people are... My riposte to this is that I think people are way too used to a Jace being like the quintessential blue planeswalker, and it goes and it goes in like only blue control decks.
Yeah.
This is the first Jace that's been like a tempo one, and I think it's actually going to go in a lot more creature decks than we're used to. So it fits in mono blue. I always felt bad playing Jace Architect of Thought in mono blue because it didn't do very much. It drew you one or two cards or something, but this one can just clear something completely out of the way. And then that problem in mono blue where you just keep drawing basic island over and over again, it's not going to happen with this plus one ability.
Yeah, because if you combine this plus one and Thassa, you are never going to draw anything you don't want.
Yeah,
because you look at the top two, put the basic in there, and then if it's another land you want non, you don't want, you just scry it to the bottom. But most likely you're just drawing it, then you plus one, get rid of the other thing. And it just with Thassa, it just means that, like, combined with Thassa, it means that you indirectly get to look at the top three cards of your deck and be like, if I don't want the top two, you get the third.
I just think that it's going to have applications in ones outside of decks with Thassa and with...
So you think you can play it multicolored? Flies.
I think you can play it. Like, I'm testing on a bug control list at the moment where Garruk's like the top of the curve. And I've been playing Jace Architect of Thought, the old one, and he's just kind of... not great in it, because you want stuff that affects the board, and Jace the Living Guildback does that. He clears the thing out of the way, they can't deal with him directly anymore, and then you start filtering your draws, and then you can bounce the thing later. And he's really good in conjunction with other planeswalkers because he protects them as well as himself. So I think he's got a lot more application than just the one kind of bog standard aggro deck.
Do you think, Kian, I know we're doing standard, but in terms of drafting, you draw Jace in the third pack, you've drafted blue and another color, is there a moment when you can't use him?
If I was blue-white and there was a triplicate spirits in the pack, it'd be really close. But
really?
I think
a common over Jace.
Well, this is triplicate spirits. That's that's almost a rare.
Yeah.
But that's drafting, isn't it? You've got to have the guts to do that. You've got to go this.
But I think I would still just grab Jace. Just because Jace comes down and in limited, being able to smooth out your draws. I mean, okay, any planeswalker in limited, you're like, cool, windmill slam, high five your buddies, know.
Yeah. I think the planeswalker phenomenon of people just freaking out and just throwing all the creatures just at it until it dies is worth cards in itself.
Yeah. I mean, you and I did that seal the other night.
People make bad decisions when the planeswalkers are out.
You had Liliana, right? Yeah. And you played Liliana and you neg 2'd it. And you just got the best thing in your deck and put it on top. And all Liliana was 5 mana. Put the best thing in your deck on top of your library, Fog.
Yeah.
And for 5 mana? Fog. Yes!
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah.
It was good. I had one creature to block with out. And the opponent's just like, whoa, I'm going to go all in at Liliana. I can't let that happen again. I was like, all right. No blocks. Play my other mythic rare from my deck because Liliana. But people get in this kind of frenzy where they're just like, I have to deal with that. And sometimes it's actually really difficult for me as a player to see avenues attacking past a planeswalker and just be like, I'll just kill them. It doesn't matter if they're drawing cards, if they're planeswalker or it's really powerful or whatever. How about if I just attack you for five, instead of wasting all these resources attacking your planeswalker?
Yeah.
I think Jace, the old Jace, Jace the Architect of Thought, is a really good example of where a lot of players don't do this. Because I've played a lot of aggressive decks in this format. I love aggressive decks. I love Voice of Resurgence, those types of cards. And, I'd have 3 tutus or whatever on the battlefield. They'd play Jace and I'd be like, oh, fuck, attack for three, and then Jace dies. But, by the time they've played Jace, they're probably on 10. So if I attack them for 3, then attack them for 3, they're on 4. Yeah, they've still got a Jace, but they're on 4 life. If I have Boris Charm in my deck or anything
It's difficult to know when to switch gears.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that a lot of newer players, they just get a goalpost fever, I like to call it. They see the goals, and the goals have suddenly shifted to Elspeth, and they're like, gotta kill Elspeth.
Gotta kill, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's the... don't name 60 cards, but what's the best deck in the format?
Okay, 18, Swamp. I think the best deck's still just Mono Black.
No.
No?
Best deck in the format is still mono black.
Okay,
objection.
What's a mono black deck?
Mono black is 4 Pack Rat, 4 Thoughtseize, 4 Lifebend Zombie, 4 Desecration Demon. Now it's got Liliana Vess. Now it's got a really good sideboard in Duress. It's got heaps of problem permanents, and it's so insanely consistent. Some versions play Grey Merchant of Asphodel. Some versions play splash colors for like some planeswalkers. And just even
is
the base
M15 added to mono black.
Sign and Blood.
Sign and Blood. Because before they played Underworld Connections, enchant your land to your devotion and stuff. But now you Sign and Blood because you don't have a lot of two drops in that deck, and you just like now you've got that card advantage.
Is like three Underworld Connections, 2 Sign and Blood, or something like that. So it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's the best deck in the format purely because of consistency, and it can attack any strategy with its large amount of hand disruption that it has.
Okay, we have an objection here to my right.
But
Willy.
The problem, like, mono black in terms of like raw power level is the best deck. But every single player worth his salt comes into a tournament and says, my deck has this plan against mono black, this plan against mono blue, and this plan against control. Because they're the three decks that you know will be there every time.
Mm-hmm.
And for every tournament I've gone into, I've always made sure that my mono black plan is good. Mm-hmm. Because I know that I'm probably going to have to verse mono black 3 or 4 times. And
that's pretty sad, actually.
Yeah, like
so much mono black.
And like I think mono black being the best deck has actually fought against it because everyone has a good plan against it.
Mm-hmm.
Now my plan has
always
the
boogeyman. Yeah.
My plan has always been go under, be aggressive, and just kill them. Now Drown and Sorrow did put a bit of a hole in this plan, but no one plays it.
No one's playing that card, yeah.
Yeah. Like if a black deck has 1 Drown and Sorrow main board, 3 sideboard, my entire plan against mono black just dies. Like, I can't actually do anything, and I'm going to lose every single game, basically.
Mm.
Because it's just as bad as Supreme Verdict, except it can't be blocked by, like,
by pump spells and stuff. Yeah.
Pump spells. Like, the things that I do a lot against control to have that out, you know, there isn't an out that's the same for Drown and Sorrow. And one of the things that I think might start happening after the Pro Tour this weekend, because, like, Rabble Red has been taken up by one of the biggest teams in the world. And, you know, like, there was, like, 20% or something, you know, one of them was saying on coverage this morning, 20% will Rabble Red. You know, if that's the metagame where 20% are red decks that play lots of one-drops, like, they're going to have to go up to Drown and Sorrow.
I don't want that.
Yeah, and then
I play control decks, man. People can't be playing one-drops, so they'll wreck me. I'll be super upset.
Yeah. So if I had to name the best deck in the format, I would probably say green-white.
Green-white?
No way. That's a joke, right?
That we can't have turned around that much. I mean, we were laughing at green-white like a month or two ago, weren't we?
But, like,
what tools has it been given by MVP?
Yeah.
It's one of those weird things that like it hasn't specifically been given anything. Okay. But something has changed.
Yeah.
And that change has allowed this deck to just rock up. Craig Wesco was playing a list that was very similar to what I've been playing for the last few weeks, actually, at the Pro Tour. And, like, you just wreck people because you do things like play a turn 3 Loxon Spider, and people are like, I just can't deal with that. And
that's a 4-4. I don't have to deal with 4-4. Yeah, no,
like, like, one of the things I did was my opponent was just like, play a bunch of guys. I was like, cool, play Loxon Smiter. Then I played a Johnny, ticked it up, made it a 5-5. I didn't attack because there wasn't a profitable attack because he had a couple of first strikers. And then, you know,
A Johnny's been added to the deck.
Not that a Johnny. M13 a Johnny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Never mind.
And then, like, next turn, I just double striked my Borough Freckener and bestowed Boonsader.
Oh, you just killed him?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Like, and
playing Boris Ragnar is for white.
Yeah.
The thing that for me I feel has been added to the deck, not from this set but from last set, is just mana confluence. Like,
I think the mana affected it enough that the decks come into something else. That,
yeah.
Okay.
And Jund Monsters has always had a fairly profitable, a fairly good matchup against the green white aggressive decks because, you know, Stormbreath Dragon blocks all white stuff and just stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm.
So, like, with the shift that I think's happened is Jund has become less popular because it was the boogeyman for a while. It was the best deck for about a month, 6 weeks, and everyone learned how to beat it. So with that lessening, green-white comes up. It's a very healthy metagame, I think, because yeah. one deck rises to the top, is then beaten by another deck.
Everyone else chops its ankles.
Yeah,
until
yeah. Sure. And that's then down. Another deck rises to the top. Yeah, and that's then, good. Which is a good metagame, mm-hmm. I think.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, let's go away. Let's come back with some tweets and news.
Yeah.
Okay, tweets and news.
Tweets and news.
You got it wrong around. It's neets and twos.
Neets and twos.
My usual comment.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll start off with... Let's start off with comments that have come in. Who have we got making comments?
We just
Aaron.
Got the one comment. We did miss a podcast a couple of weeks ago. We don't like to admit it. We don't like to draw attention
wasn't
to it.
Wasn't the Magic team.
It wasn't the Magic team.
No, it was the board game team. Those other guys.
Yeah, but like the big team of producers and executive producers and sub-producers and assistant producers and various levels of producers.
Yeah.
Matt.
Yeah.
From a couple of weeks
Matt.
Ago.
Yeah.
We did have to miss a week, so we've got the double punch of last week we did Small World, this week we've got this one.
I believe we put out an apology, though.
We did. Yeah. We did. We posted.
And everyone took that quite graciously, I'd imagine.
Oh, almost everyone.
Yeah.
Apologies. Well, saying that someone, Seven Land Handers. That's yeah. people that listen to Seven Land Hand.
Yeah.
Not people who hand you things seven times. Handers. We're not going to meet our deadline this week. We will be back next weekend to blame the culprit. See you then. And
that's beautifully written.
That's lovely.
That's a lovely, apologetic, well-toned thing.
I'd take that and be like, I don't think I ever need to listen to the podcast again. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like a eulogy.
Yeah, fantastic.
And we got one comment from...
Who?
I'm
up to the mood.
I think you know. I think you know who it is.
What's that crazy bastard been up to?
I don't like this comment. Oh, he says...
He's got an anti-show.
Three words.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dismal
yeah.
effort.
Oh.
Come on, Tim. Come on. Dismal. We're trying our hardest, buddy.
No, you know what? I agree with him. That's correct.
Oh, sad. We were sad.
Yeah, we were sad. Aaron and I were here. Let's put it that way. We're not going to blame anybody. Aaron and I...
Panting,
were
looking
available.
At the door for our master, and he did not arrive.
What was the reason?
He had to go home.
All right. So, badges.
Badges.
You can get yourself a Hyper Magic Nerd badge.
I thought you said badges. I got really excited. I was like, where? Where are the badges?
Charging everywhere. Holy shit. Hyper Magic Nerd badges. All right. You can leave a comment anywhere. Facebook us. That sort of stuff. Say something.
Yeah. I think we're going to have some comments on our pretty snappy Super Series videos that are going to be coming out.
Yeah, and we might have some sort of feedback on your discussions over the different color combinations and the effects on standard that M15 has or hasn't had.
Mm-hmm.
So, fire away.
And also, people of the future, tell us how the Pro Tour went. Because
yeah.
we don't know yet.
Yeah.
Tell us who wins. That'd be good.
I would bet all of my money.
No.
All right. So moving on to news. I was just trying to read my notes that I wrote really quickly here, and I read, shut the fuck up. That would be bad for the pod, but it actually says... Site fuck up. This is kind of interesting. I did a bit of homework and found out why you can't play the podcast straight off the website.
Oh, why?
It's because the PodPress bit of software that I use on the sevenlandhand.com won't play M4As. Now, if you've noticed when you subscribe to iTunes and you get our podcast down, it's been beautiful. It has different pictures throughout it, has chapters, all that sort of stuff, because it's an enhanced podcast.
Yeah.
Apparently PodPress doesn't like that, and he wants an MP3.
Ugh.
So what I might do tonight is I might just pump this out with a boring, no pictures throughout it.
Yep.
So it's an MP3, and then everyone can listen to it off the site from episode on.
That's a shame.
Yeah, so if you missed the pictures, write in and complain, and I'll go back to pictures, and no one can listen to it on the site.
Can I write in and complain?
No. Super Series.
Pictures.
How's the Super Series going, Aaron?
Super Series is going well. We had a secret winner. I'm not going to spoil it this time.
No, that's right, yeah.
Which is why you got to watch the video.
Yeah.
We're taking a month off qualifiers because a lot of the Perth players are going
drunk.
To the Grand Prix Sydney, where they will be drunk.
Yeah.
There will be many drunken tales about Penstock.
Yeah, we'll no doubt cover that on several
Yeah. So Super Series will be back for September, when it's our last look at the standard format before Khans of Tarkir happens. Two weeks later.
Fantastic.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, that'll be cool. So that video will be out as soon as video producer Toby G. Venus finishes his handiwork on it, and I imagine that's within hours of happening. We've got next month we're doing Agricola. Agricola is
it's
how
like
I say
Agricola, like a Coca-Cola that's really angry but without the N.
Lana Del Rey has a song that starts, "My pussy tastes like Pepsi Cola," and I've been trying to practice singing "My pussy tastes like Agricola." So maybe next month.
Agricola means farmers, so your pussy tastes like farmers.
Well, that could happen. have you ever tasted it?
Your one, no.
Yeah. All right. I just had apologies coming through on the phone. I've asked some people for questions.
Oh yeah.
Then they come up with, I don't know anything about M15.
Thanks.
Oh no. Sorry. And what was the other thing? I've got no idea what Magic M15 is. Granted, I might not have chosen the right gaming audience to poke. It's just that they happen to be on Messenger on Facebook. So I said, ask us a question.
All right.
That's how desperate we are to give away these badges, people.
I don't know anything about Magic 15s.
Yeah.
What?
All right. And so to finish off with news, we've got the big competition between now and Christmas-ish. We'll be talking a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. Listen to such shit. Learn up. Study it up like it's an exam. And win yourself Store Garrick. Rockingham people, you can win Rockingham Garrick. Mm-hmm. St. James people, you can win St. James Garrick.
Yep. How do you win St. James Garrick?
Oh, what we're going to do around Christmas time is ask a question about something that we've said in the last 6 months, and whoever answers correctly, or all the people that answer correctly, we'll put them into a beanie in Rockingham and a top hat in St. James, and, and draw out a winner for each one. And if you're an international listener, we're not going to post you Store Garrick's, because that would just be...
We'll chop it up into bits and send you pieces of him. No, probably not.
This is a threat to the rest of your family.
Garrick glowing eye in one envelope.
On a side note that's kind of related...
You can't enter, Kian.
I really, really want to win the Nerf axe.
There's a Nerf axe coming. Yeah. But you know what? Seven Land Hand doesn't have an access to that.
We don't have rights to that.
No, they don't let us. They're not going to let us have that.
Sad.
Yeah, but there's a Nerf. There's a Nerf axe going to be around.
Fierce Apex Asex Predator,
which is good news, because that means you can win that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yay!
And you'll put it to good use, I'm sure.
Thank you very much to Dr. David, as always, guiding our conversation, almost falling back on his chair there from here in the Austin Mengler Gallery. Thank you very much to Austin Mengler for coming on, discussing art with us. That was a lot of fun.
Beautiful.
Yeah, very much enjoyed
He'll
that.
He'll be back.
And thank you very much to KDVT, our DVT brand new. Man. Permanent member of our magic.
Just like any other deep vein thrombosis, it'll be there forever. floating around in the bloodstream.
Unless you exercise your legs as you sit on the plane.
Yeah.
I thought I'd I thought I'd finish the podcast with a tale of a magical duel that I did the other day when I planeswalked to Zendikar, and the land's been ravaged by the Eldrazi Titans. And I'd been planeswalking, challenging other planeswalkers to duels. I'd built my library of spells mentally, and I was dueling this wizard from Zendikar. And it was very, very late. The many seasons had turned, battles had raged for many, many moons, and I had just created a squirrel nest to hamper my opponent. I enchanted it upon one of my forests that I was drawing my mana from. I had mana bombs.
Squirrels of doom.
So I'd just enchanted this, and I'd attacked my opponent with enough squirrels that that his life force was very, very low. I'd say it was about one. His life force was the number one. But then he destroyed each and every one of my squirrels with a toxic deluge. That put him to that one life. And so I didn't have any squirrels left, but I did have this nest.
It's the longest outro in the friggin' universe.
Anyway, he had 15 mana bonds, and he used all 15 mana bonds, pulling energy from all across the multiverse to summon Emrakul himself. And so he summoned Emrakul, and as it was just coming over to kill me, I had one last turn to make a squirrel. And so the squirrel popped out of his nest, and then I gathered all my courage for the squirrel to hold a bowl of hot soup. And as the squirrel carried the hot soup, Emrakul recoiled in fear, and the squirrel was able to pass past Emrakul and deal the last point of damage to my opponent, who then fled in great shame as the squirrel holding hot soup murdered him.
I would like to say that he probably just ate the soup.
And Rakul's just eating the soup, got distracted, squirrel killed the last guy.
That was arduous.
That was nice.
Thanks, Aaron.
No problem.
Shout out to Axel and Jody.